for the Motor City Maniac, the Wit from the Mitt, the Great Lakes Grandmaster, the Motown Madman, the Mittens, Killer Kitten. We ran out of nicknames. You're listening to Louder with Crowder.
Good morning, good evening, good day. It is wonderful, lovely Friday. Isn't Friday the best day of the week? I know, I think so.
Hey, you're delusional.
What? Why do you, and see, here's the thing. I didn't ask for your opinion yet. I didn't even request that you come in. I didn't even have a silent desire that you come in. Yet you do immediately with your negativity.
Friday is the busiest day of the week in radio. Even in music radio, it's the busiest day of the week. So typically I've always, well, for the last 20 years, disliked Friday. I love Monday because it's the easiest day of the week in radio.
That's funny because typically for the last 20 years, everyone else has disliked you.
No, that's been for the last 45 years.
That's been for the last 45 years.
Yeah.
That's fine. You've got me in studio. I'm live here in Detroit for the first time in a while. Come on,
oh,
don't you feel good?
Come on, admit it. You're live here in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Well, Ann Arbor, but broadcasting all across Detroit. And we're shooting a video here in Ann Arbor, me and my lovely producer, Jared, a story which we will get to later this week. They want to essentially ban words at Ann Arbor, U of M. They've spent $16,000 in university money to, of course, you shouldn't use the N word. Of course, you shouldn't use the F word. We know these things.
Or the R word.
You can say retard on air, retarded. You're allowed to. It's not hate. I mean, you shouldn't say it and walk up to someone who's special needs and use that word, but now they're trying to ban that. But they also want to ban words like crazy, because it's insensitive to the clinically insane, and gypped, because that's offensive to gypsies.
Oh, for Pete's sakes.
For Pete's sakes. You didn't say for Pete's sakes off air. That's why we need the after show here at Louder with Crowder. So that is what's happened. Of course, we'll get to all the stories. Brian Williams taking a leave of absence now 6 months suspension without pay. I don't know if you've seen that. That's kind of a big deal. We'll get into that. And, of course, the Chapel Hill shooting, which right off the bat, listen, this is an entertainment show. So obviously we're going to be making some jokes. But hearts and prayers go out to the victims and the families of the victims of the Chapel Hill shooting. Really, obviously, a senseless tragedy. What I hate about this tragedy, you know, let's just go right into Chapel Hill. There's so many things to discuss with this issue. There's so many facets to this. Namely, the thing that really bothers me is the media conjecture right away. We didn't know what happened. And right away, you have trending topics. Muslim lives matter. The media is not, you know, here's the big problem with this is the professional victimhood. Aside from the obvious problem that someone was shot and killed. Several people. My apologies. My throat just went and the cough button's broken.
It's because you put cream in my coffee. and you don't have to use the cough button, the off button.
But then I have to hit two buttons and that's just ridiculous.
Oh, you're just getting lazy.
I am just getting lazy. By the way, the coffee's hit me, so we're going to wait until that nice long half hour break.
You're going to be like, I am Cornholio.
Oh gosh. You can't say that on air. That's scatological, fun dip.
Yeah, well, it's just a television reference, so it's okay.
It's not okay. It's not okay. It's not like you could reference Roots. Remember that TV movie?
Yeah.
Where they're beating the black guys, and you're just like, oh, we get it. I was talking, yeah, Chapel Hill shooting. So, obviously, it's a tragedy that anyone was shot, and that's horrible. But what's really sad is the media jumping on this without getting the facts, and then the right and the left doing the professional victimhood thing. If you went on Twitter, it was Muslim Lives Matter, right? And everyone was tweeting out, oh, the media isn't covering this because three Muslims were shot. If it were white people shot, the media would cover it. And then on the right, they were saying, oh, the media is not covering this because it's a liberal atheist and it doesn't set their narrative. Meanwhile, front page, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, Huffington Post, it was front page everywhere. Don't you just hate it when they go, the media won't cover this because, and that's all they're doing, is covering it.
I'm actually depressed to call myself a news guy in those instances.
You're not really a news guy.
I say the words in a row through a microphone. Yeah, I mean.
Between coffee bathroom breaks.
Well, typically I've called myself a disc jockey with a newsman's voice.
Yeah.
And so, because when I was working...
Disc jockey. There is no way any horse is carrying you to the winning ticket in a finish line.
Oh, not that kind of jockey. Oh, man. Well, it may be one of those big horses from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think so. And it went back, right, and I'm really upset that it went back to a Lord of the Rings reference or Star Wars reference with you. I hate the recent Hobbit films. I honestly can't stand them. I believe it was just a truly terrible piece of cinematic.
Well, they never needed to break down The Hobbit into three movies when the Lord of the Rings trilogy was three.
And you
movies.
Can tell that they're reaching, like, by the third Hobbit, it's like, so Frodo, what you want for lunch?
No, Bilbo. Frodo was in
Frodo, oh, yeah, that's right. No, I'm gonna, fanboys, hold your mail. It's not Frodo, it's Bilbo Baggins, and you need a wife.
I actually got more into Lord of the Rings through my wife than I had been previously.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, she really is a Tolkien fan.
Do not be surprised if she leaves you for a woman named Clyde. There's a strong possibility of that happening.
Well, no, she might leave me for a woman named, like, Samsung 54-inch TV. But another human being, it would never happen.
Right. I was thinking another electronic device. So we're talking about the Chapel Hill shooting. So in light of the shooting, right, there's this tense dynamic between atheists and Islamics. Okay, first off, of course Muslim lives matter. People are coming out, and they got mad right away. Okay, so Chapel Hill shooting, for those of you who don't know, and by the way, I released a video, it's up at louderwithcrowder.com, as we heard this information, okay? And I said, we don't know yet. And you know what? I didn't know. That it turns out this most likely was actually due to a parking spot spat. Which Jared is already laughing here in the studio. And the only reason, it's not that lost lives are ever funny. But if you've ever felt that rage in a car or in a parking lot over a parking spat, you just take that and turn it up to 11.
I videotaped one of those one time at Meijer, just a mile away from here, and put it on YouTube and called it Modern Civility. People were going nuts.
Yeah, I get the sense that you're the kind of guy who could go postal over a parking spot.
I could go postal over just having a conversation on the telephone with somebody. I'm just crazy.
Yeah, you are. You need counseling, and I need counseling, too.
My counselor retired. She said she didn't want to counsel me anymore.
Okay. The dialogue's fine when we're later on in the show. We have to do the news here. So, the shooter, his neighbors described the shooter as confrontational and obsessed with parking. Craig Hicks, the shooter, had a history of confrontations with his Muslim neighbors. He was constantly having cars towed, so he was obsessed about parking. So when it first came out and people were like, well, this might not be terrorism because it might have been an act of parking violations. Oh, you're just saying that Muslim lives don't matter. Just like we didn't wait until the information came out with Trayvon, with Mike Brown, Black Lives Matter. Let me say this, okay? If this guy, and we now know it's probably not the case, if he shot people solely because they're Muslim, and because he's trying to wipe out Muslims, absolutely that's terrorism, okay? And I have no problem calling it that. But the reason most Islamic killings are referred to as terrorism is not because they're brown. It's because, by definition, terrorism has to have a stated ideological or political motive. It is a means to achieve a political end. That's what terrorism is. And with Islamic honor killings, or burning someone alive, or beheading someone, by the way, in the time that I've been broadcasting this radio show, there have been more deaths at the hands of Islamic terrorists than this one incident here. Okay? So it's important to keep that in context. The point is, terrorism needs to have a stated terrorist motive. It's pretty easy to tell that when ISIS is saying, we're doing this to instate global Sharia. The West will fall. We're going to kill this guy because we want everyone to convert to Islam. Okay, you just stated a motive. That's terrorism. We don't have that with this case yet. It might have been a parking tiff. So that's why it's not. That's why it's not when people go, why isn't it terrorism? It's because he's a white guy. No, dummy. It's because we don't know what his motive was. You know, he could have went out and killed him because he was Muslim, or he could have went out and killed somebody because there was too many green Skittles in his packet. He's that kind of a nutshell.
You can never have too many green Skittles.
I guess green M&Ms. I don't know, Fun Dip. You know what? Just take me to a damn break. I'm going to get too mad here. We'll come back. We'll run some clips from people who've just made a just horrendous lists of inaccurate comments regarding this story, which is why I always stay out of it until we have all the facts. We try and be honest, even though I'm not a journalist. It's amazing. I'm a comedian, and I do a better job at this than journalists. You never heard me claim to be a journalist, Fun Dip.
Nope.
I'm an entertainer. Yet I do my due diligence, and these people just hack it up. Louder with Crowder.
You're listening to Louder with Crowder on Wham! Talk 1600.
So glad you are back. So glad I am back. And you know what? For the first time in a long time, you chowderheads out there who listen to the program, we'll let you call in 734-822-1600. Do you think Muslim lives matter? Do you think the media is not covering this story enough? 734-822-1600. Once again, that's 734-822-1600. We're going to have a guest on here in the next half hour. So if you call in the next 1 minute, we can take you. Otherwise, we'll have to take you in about 45 minutes. So the Muslim Lives Matter thing, this is trending. It's important for people to realize that a lot of conservatives get disconnected because they're watching Fox News or listening to AM radio. And if you want to know what is being infused into the culture, you should go on Twitter, go on Instagram, go on Vine. Facebook's a little bit older, and look at the trending topics, because right away you can see the social activism. And with the shooting, before the information came in, people were doing the whole, media's not covering it because these are Muslims who died. I mean, let's roll that clip of Chris Hayes just to embody this whole dumb spirit.
Refugees have now hit more than $250,000. The goal was just $20,000. On Twitter, the hashtags Muslim Lives Matter and Our Three Winners have become a rallying cry for so many people, and it feels to me, as someone observing this admittedly from the outside, like a galvanizing moment for Muslim Americans, a Trayvon Martin moment, a Michael Brown moment for Muslim America.
Gravy.
Though obviously very different in the context.
All right, okay. I guess we have to pay for that service. That's why they put that quote in there all the time. Well, sorry, Gravy, and we didn't realize. We're not trying to freeboot. I just got your promotional email last night, you stooges.
I was like, where is this other voice
Gravy
coming?
Your solutions. Actually, it's a good guy, Tom Elliott, who sent it over to me. They do a great job of compiling clips, which, you know, we spend so much time doing, so it's an archive library. But back to the point. Talking about the Muslim Lives Matter, they're trying to turn everything into a social justice situation.
Yeah, all lives matter the same.
Good point.
And to me, not much.
Especially if they mess with your parking spot.
Or my coffee.
This is true. By the way, how do you like this coffee this morning?
It is not bad. It's a little bit different, but...
It's more flavorful than the general, you know, Maxwell House crap.
Well, no, I like Folgers better than Maxwell House. Even my dad called me. He said, you know, Mom's been dead 3 or 4 years. What coffee do you think I should drink? Because I don't have to buy her brand anymore. And I said,
Stop. Don't say anything because we might get a coffee sponsor soon. So insert brand here.
Oh yeah.
We'll retroactively go back.
Yeah. Whatever. Well, he didn't like her coffee. So finally I told him about mine and he likes it better than the weak Maxwell House.
Okay, shut up,
Fun
Dip. So Chapel Hill shooting.
I get off on tangents.
Here's the thing with the Chapel Hill shooting. Everyone laughed when we said it was about a parking tiff, right? Initially, we have it right here. By the way, the shooter, super progressive atheist. I don't know if you knew that, Fun Dip. Was a fan of MSNBC, Huffington Post, Rachel Maddow, part of very, very active anti-conservative, anti-Tea Party groups, militant atheist, hated Christians. So there you go. Whenever people say atheists don't come out, they do. They do. Here's an example of it.
Wow, you don't see that very often. Typically, atheists are really laid back.
That's not true. It's not true at all. Now, by the way,
maybe agnostics are more laid back because we simply don't care either way.
Right. But atheists are taking a position. By the way, and I think you would be fair enough to acknowledge this, you don't know. And
yeah,
I don't
know. Atheists are just as arrogant as Christians and Muslims because they think they know something. I admit I'm a moron who has
no
clue.
But at the very least, I think I know something and try and offer you hope as opposed to an atheist who says, I know there is no hope.
No, even as an agnostic, I know there's no hope.
Oh, gosh, Fun Dip. Way to bring us down in the morning. Take the coffee as an upper and then just listen to Fun Dip as a downer. But the point is this, listen, and here's one thing I will concede. When people say religion is not the cause of all wars. Religion is not the cause of all violence. Okay? Evil is. And this is an example of that. And you see you look at Stalin, you look at some atheist regimes that have taken out just throngs of people throughout history. And I know some people will try and argue, you know, Pol Pot, Stalin, they weren't really atheists, and Hitler wasn't a Christian yet, an immense amount of disdain for Christians, but
it's possible that the atheists just get sick of people coming and knocking on their doors and trying to hand them pamphlets.
They're tired of the Mormon bicycles and ties. Let me make this point though, Fundip. Evil is the root cause, okay? Now, if someone were to say, so do you think that religion causes more violence? Well, if you look at Islam, sure. Because the root inspiration of Islam is Muhammad. And Muhammad was evil. He was an evil terrorist. So I do believe that, yeah, you're probably going to have more violence in the name of religion, certainly Islam, because their holiest prophet was religious. Christianity, unlike that, if you look at the root of Christianity, Christians have screwed up, but the root is Jesus, where even if you don't believe in him as a person.
Oh, he was a neat guy.
Just think of it as a great Aesop fable. There's nothing you can do to mimic Jesus that would be harmful to your neighbor. The world would be a better place.
Oh, yeah.
Now, people have screwed that up. So, yeah, with religion, some root causes of religion are evil, and so it's much easier for people to commit those acts. But the fact is, with human nature, and this is something that in Christian we believe, with original sin, with human nature, people are sinful, people are evil. And so you see, with an atheist who doesn't even necessarily have... a doctrine, a foundation of beliefs.
No
kind of dogma. Though they would argue that, you know, they still do have morals that are set in stone, that it's not entirely situational ethics. That's another conversation to have. But you can see them. They can still go off because it's a parking spot. Or they can go off and take out an entire nation of, you know, almost a nation of people with someone like Stalin. So it is important for people to look at this myth and say, ah, okay, it's not necessarily true. By the way, after the break, we're going to have fantastic Lierre Keith on, who, for those of you who don't know, listen to the segment. Okay, let's listen. She's an environmentalist feminist, but she wrote The Vegetarian Myth, and she actually talks about veganism. Vegans want to kill her, and how she's a pro-meat advocate.
Any girl that likes steak is a friend of mine.
Yeah, even though we disagree on almost everything else, I think you'll be interested to hear what she has to say about the FDA and big farms. And she knows her stuff and what humans are designed to eat biologically. A lot of the things you know, giant...
Hebrew National hot dogs, you!
I don't think she would say that. But meat. Anyways, well, we'll be right back with Lierre Keith. Stay tuned. Then we'll be back with your calls.
On the
We are back with a guest who actually, it's funny, I'm a big fan of some of the stuff she's written and she's done. We certainly don't agree on a lot, but on some things she's incredibly informative, and I'm really glad to have her on, author of The Vegetarian Myth. Right off the bat, we're bound to get some letters. Lierre Keith, thank you so much for being on with us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Stephen.
Well, good. So, listen, this book... I've been reading for a while now. I'll be honest, you know, I've probably read about two-thirds of the way through. You make some... First off, for the audience who may not be familiar with you, why don't you tell them your story as to how you came about writing this book?
Right. So I spent 20 years as a vegan. I became a vegan when I was 16, the way that most people become vegans, which is I had a friend who was a vegan, and she and her family were really into being vegan, and within 2 weeks of knowing her, I was completely convinced that I had to do this, and I was one of those people who did not give up. Most people actually who try it give up in 3 months. That's what the studies show, and I did not give up for 20 years, and,
right.
and the process like completely destroyed my health. It was just an utter collapse. So when that happens, especially when you have clung to an ideology that strongly, it's really hard. It's, you know, your whole world sort of collapses around you because nothing makes sense anymore. And you don't even know who you are anymore at that point. So I spent a good 4 or 5 years after that trying to figure out what had I done wrong? because I hadn't done the diet wrong. So why did this go so wrong? So I had to look at a whole bunch of information that I had shuttled aside in service of this ideology. And then just a huge realm of information was then open to me. There were all kinds of things I could explore, but
it's crazy because listen, it's no secret with people listening here, whether online or terrestrially, that I have a passionate disdain for veganism, but sometimes for different reasons. I mean, let's be clear here. You were a little bit nervous about coming on the show because obviously I'm one of those right wing kind of nut jobs. You are certainly not by any means, a right winger as you write this book against veganism.
No, I mean, I come at this from a very sympathetic perspective. I was in that world. I understand the values of that world, and I don't intend to give up the values of that world. And this is why the vegans hate me, is because I still claim the same moral ground. I won't give it up. And they're really mad that I could come to different conclusions. And this is where you bump into the fundamentalism, you know, of any ideology that gets you cling so tightly that it becomes wrong.
Yeah.
Even starts out in a good direction. It ends, you can't hang on to anything that tightly. And sure. Have it turn out okay.
Well, you know, I really hate that, and this is kind of where we can find some common ground. I hate this idea that if you eat animals, you hate animals. I mean, we have a dog. He's actually sitting right here. We'll bring up the Hopper cam for people watching online who, you know, we adopted a 90-pound, looks like the world's biggest, meanest pit bull who was balding. He had alopecia, broken leg, Lyme disease. Because we love it, we're animal lovers. But I don't see it as something that is unnatural or goes against nature or in any way displays hatred because of the way we are designed as human beings. And you talk about that a lot in your book. Tell me a bit about that, and as someone who is really more of an environmentalist and more of an animal rights person, how you sort of rectify that.
So I have a 90-pound dog, too.
Oh, there you go. What kind of dog?
I have a Great Pyrenees.
Oh, well, you know what? This is a Doggo Argentino, and if you're familiar with the breed...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Know them.
Great Pyrenees is part of the... gives them the big square head, so, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, I got my dog for protection, so I'm really... she's fabulous. Anyway, I put her outside.
Wait, protection from vegans?
Yeah, well, yeah, I get a lot of death threats. Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to be able to follow through. Listen.
They're too exhausted, I know.
They're too exhausted, and they're not necessarily pro-Second Amendment people. I mean, I tell everyone, listen... I don't even invest in an alarm system. I have shotguns out the wazoo and a 90-pound dog. But, you know,
that's
I get death threats from the
most. You're looking at my alarm system.
When
I do these
interviews,
that's my alarm system. I want them to see that. And I have a dog and I have a permit to carry. So,
there's only so many.
I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment as well. I think people have a right to defend themselves. And especially when you live under this kind of, you know, just constant harassment, there's a point past which you just have to take it seriously.
Sure.
And I do. So they're crazy people.
Absolutely. I mean, I was telling you about the last comments I got on YouTube right before I came on. I can't even repeat it on air.
That's horrible.
Yeah, very anti-Semitic, very, you know, homophobic, even though I'm not Jewish or gay. But
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
They can at you and hope that some of it sticks. That's what they want, is just to hurt you.
And I've read the most horrible things about you, to the point that honestly, when I first heard about you, I thought like, oh, this has got to be like a right wing Sarah Palin, a hunting wolves kind of chick who the vegans are just furious with. That's not the case at all. How did this transition occur? And do you think that even makes them more mad because it's kind of like a Muslim convert who needs to be executed?
I'm an apostate.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. So, yeah. All right. So you had this other question, a real question, that it was about environmentalism.
Right.
So the thing that I did not know when I was 16, there's two parts to this. One is that agriculture is the most destructive thing that people have done to the planet. And I can walk you through that if you want to hear about it. So I thought that I was eating this peaceful, loving, sustainable, you know, totally compassionate diet. And it's not true. It is the most destructive human activity. And those were the foods I was eating, as somehow thinking that this was peaceful and compassionate. It's not. It's biotic cleansing is what it is. And, you know, we've wiped out 98% of the old-growth forests, and somewhere around 90% of the world's prairies have been destroyed, mostly in the service of agriculture. So for anyone to say that, you know, wiping out the massive amounts of habitat for every living creature that needs a home, there's nothing that's environmentally sound about this. In fact, I've got all kinds of wonderful quotes from, you know, very serious people about the fact that this cannot be done sustainably, that it's an absolute oxymoron to call anything sustainable agriculture. The only thing that sustains is petrochemicals, plows, and fences, and subsidies, federal subsidies.
Yeah.
That's what keeps the whole system going at this point. And there's nothing environmental about this. It's been sold to us as the way to eat green, and nothing could be further from the truth. Now, the part where we can disagree is about factory farming, because I think everybody can see that, A, these poor creatures are just living horrible lives.
Sure.
And B, it is absolutely just a total waste of everybody's energy, from calories on up, to feed bizarre things to animals that were not designed to eat them. And it is very energy intensive. Cows are not designed to eat corn. They should not be eating corn. It kills them. It makes us unhealthy when we eat them.
I hate to cut you off, but I want you to hold that thought, because I'm with you here. Louder with Crowder will be right back after the break.
Louder with Crowder.
Hey, this is Stephen Crowder with Louder with Crowder to tell you about one of my favorite sites on the web, AR15.com. I know you hear AR15 say, isn't that the scary black rifle? It is, but AR15.com is actually the best website if you want a community from which to learn about how to care for your gun, gun safety, where to find concealed permits, courses, as well as the best online gun store in the business. I'm talking ammo, accessories, upgrades, all of it can be found at AR15.com. That's AR15.com.
We are back with who I think is a fascinating guest, Leah Keith, who is talking right now just about factory farming. So, to be fair, a lot of problems with the other things that you said, but I agree with you on the federal subsidies and the factory farming. Listen, it's also a piece. Listen, I just wrote a piece in the Blaze magazine that went up this week. The scam of the FDA and USDA, or first off, supplements. It was an all-encompassing piece, but also the organic food scam. It's complete. I actually went down and I buy locally from farms. You know, I buy lamb, I buy eggs, and they will never be certified organic because they can't afford it. The subsidized mega farms can afford right fence posts, or, you know, they use the right chemicals, even though there's plenty of pesticides and chemical fertilizers that are used in organic food. So tell us a bit about that and the shell game that is factory farming and why people of all political walks should know about it.
Okay, so back and way up, 1950, factory farming is invented because they took all the ammunition plants from World War II and they converted them to nitrogen fertilizer. Since that point, we've been eating oil. Okay, that's what the entire thing is based on. And what that created was a mountain of corn, just a vast amount of corn. There was no way to sell that much corn, to eat that much corn. What were they going to do with all that corn? And the answer was, hey, let's put animals in really hellacious conditions and essentially make them live in cities on concrete floors inside steel buildings, and we'll force feed them corn and make them get really fat really fast, which makes the meat cheap, but it also makes the animals really sick, and it makes us really sick. This is not the meat we were designed to eat, and it's not the native diet of a cow. And the only reason this is possible is because of the Farm Bill every year that subsidizes the growing of that corn.
It's
meant is that all of these poor farmers are essentially serfs to the six corporations that control the world food supply. So they're, you know, hand in glove, and that's our tax dollars are going to pay for this stuff. And by making those subsidies every year on things like corn and wheat and soy, it means that the cheapest calories out there are this crap carbohydrate. And that's why America's got fat, especially poor people. Because it's all they can afford.
The
only reason they can afford it is because that's what's subsidized. We're not subsidizing the real food. We're not subsidizing farmers. We're subsidizing corn that's grown with fossil fuel.
There are so many points there to even get into. Firstly, I will tell you that half the world's corn supply is consumed by French Canadians when they have a big corn roast. Literally, all it is bowls of corn. You roll it in a stick of butter and put salt on it, and people will eat literally 20 ears of corn each. It's a cultural thing. But, you know, you're right, and it's funny because I know you would obviously align yourself more to the left than someone like myself. But I couldn't be more against subsidies for farmers. I hate it when politicians on either side, and, of course, what they do is they do it under the guise of, oh, we have to help the American farmer, the poor little American farmer. You know, weather is so volatile and seasons change, and they don't know their crops aren't so consistent. We have to subsidize them because we have to save the American farmer. And that's not the case. Whether you're a vegetarian, a vegan, or liberal or conservative, I think it's a point that's missed on a lot of people. Just like with banks, the Federal Reserve, when you pick winners and losers in any industry, it always, and it's a centralized power from the federal government, it always favors the big guys. And in this case, like you're talking about, in the United States, it favors the big farms who can afford the lobbyists who can manipulate policy. And you've talked about that in your book, and that's something that I can completely agree with and I'm on board with.
So, you know, and the other environmental problem, of course, is that none of this is ultimately sustainable. You know, every single civilization that's ever sprung up around agriculture, it's the basis of civilization is agriculture, collapses. And it's because it wears out the topsoil. You can't clear all the life off the land, plant it to nothing but what humans are going to eat, and expect that to last. So civilizations last between 800 and 2,000 years, and then they collapse. Mm-hmm. Because that's the exact point when the soil gives out. I mean, you can predict it. It's been 800 and 2,000 years. The soil will not last longer than that. And, you know, they die essentially eating each other. You find human remains in the cooking pots, and that's the end of it. You know, it just returns to dust. Because this is an activity that cannot be sustained. That's the problem right
there. So basically, if we go vegan, fast forward a couple hundred years, we're Lord of the Flies smacking chubby little piggy for his glasses to create a fire.
Yes. We
that's,
are.
That's a very bad place to end up. Let me ask you this. So you consider yourself, I don't want to misrepresent you, but you consider yourself an environmentalist.
Yes.
So pro Second Amendment, good. Pro meat, good. Mm-hmm. Now you talk about these problems as far as environmental sustainability. So let's go with that premise. I have some problems with it, but let's go with it for time. Here's my main issue. Having been to the climate summits, Copenhagen, Cancun, watched the speeches from Ted Turner, do environmentalists see, or let me just ask you, do you see an irony in obviously condemning big government and their cozy relationship with big business? Completely on board. But then a lot of the solutions that are offered by people tend to involve the government or needing some sort of government policy. If we can't trust them right now with their food supply, if we can't trust them right now to enact sensible food policy, why would we entrust them to, you know, save the planet?
Well, I think the only way we ever get a government that works is by just constant pressure applied constantly. It's, you know, you can never be not vigilant in the case of people in power. And so I don't think we can ever give up. It's not like, oh, here, fix this for us. It's just, it means constant struggle against those in power to try to get them to do something right. And I think that at this point, the problems are so gigantic and so systemic that we need every solution anybody can think of to try to turn this around before it's too late.
But do you really think that solution can come from the government, or even if we bring it to the government, that they wouldn't screw it up? I mean, that's my end game. Listen, I think we all want a cleaner earth. And I just certainly don't want to get off into the areas that we disagree too much, but I'll just leave it at that then. It's one of those things where I do not trust the government with something as mammoth as saving the planet. If I can't trust them with a checking account, I don't know why I would trust them with the ozone layer. But back to the meat thing. So, you know what's funny? I've got a personal story with that. I got convinced to do the green smoothie thing for a while. And, you know, a good friend of mine actually is Rob Wolf. He'll be on the podcast radio show.
That's great.
Yeah, a few weeks from now. And he's just like hardcore libertarian. So I'm kind of between you and him. But he was one of the first guys who said like, oh yeah, you should stop doing that. Right. And we see it everywhere right now. You know, greensmoothieblog.com. Well, I also happen to have hypothyroidism, which is very rare for a young.
Me too. Yeah, it's unusual for a man. Yeah, I got
exactly. Usually pre-diabetes. It's a sign of that. And my doctor said, well, yeah, you know what? If you're doing all the raw spinach and the kale, which we've all been told is the best thing for you, as you can stuff in a blender, it's not. Tell us just, if only to save one thyroid gland out there, why the whole green smoothie, green juice thing might not be as good for you as you think.
Yeah, a lot of those vegetables are really hard on your thyroid. Yeah. They just are. They're goitrogens, and they're going to do damage really hard on your thyroid to deal with all the compounds that are in those vegetables. A lot of vegetables are not particularly edible until you cook them, first of all.
Right.
You know, a lot of people want you to believe, a lot of the sort of vegan, raw vegan people, oh, if they cook it, it's bad. And it's like, it's not actually edible until you apply heat, because you have to destroy what are called anti-nutrients.
Right.
And anti-nutrients, that's one of the ways that plants fight back. Plants don't really want to be eaten either. They can't run, and they don't have teeth and claws like animals. So their only defense are chemicals. And they are the original chemical warfare people. They know how to make chemicals that can hurt you and that can protect themselves and protect their babies, essentially. Right. So seeds are really hard to eat. You have to do all kinds of things to trick them, to make them edible. And most of the plant as well, it doesn't want to be eaten. That's why it tastes bitter. That's why it's poisonous. I mean, we have no way to digest cellulose anyway as humans. I mean, you need multiple chambers in your stomach, tons of bacteria that can do the work, like a cow can do that. We can't even do it. So most of the plant matter on this planet is never going to be food for us. But even the things we can sort of semi-digest tend to be a lot more edible when heat is applied right. and those anti-nutrients are destroyed.
It's one of those things. It is just one of those things that nobody believes when you tell them. Like, I heard the raw food diet, you know, because Andy Dick's doing it. I'm going, does Andy Dick look healthy to you? You schmohawk. Literally, I remember him, he was on Conan going, I'm doing the raw food diet. I'm like, well, I'm going to avoid that. That's actually what spurred me to look into why I thought maybe the green smoothies were bad. And Rob educated me. And now, you know, it's funny. I do a lot of raw egg yolks and I do the fermented cod liver oil.
Good.
Yeah. All good.
Very good things to eat raw. Some things are very edible raw. Some things are not. Raw organ meats, you should eat a little of those every week too.
Sure.
I know we are very grossed out in this culture by this, but around the world, across human history, those are the foods that are considered sacred. And it's for a reason. You know, some of the nutrients are destroyed when they're heated. And so raw liver, you know, raw kidney, raw heart, a little bit every week goes a long way.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear you say this, obviously, knowing your history. So you were vegan, right? And then you go into this, and you're not just, by the way, you're not just no longer vegan. For those tuning in right now, we have Lear Keith with us, who was a former vegan, wrote The Vegetarian Myth, great book. You're doing like bone broth and organ meat. You know, they're just picturing you like 28 days later carving into a carcass. So a pretty big 180. What do you say to someone who might argue, obviously vegan, like you said, is ideological extremism, and now you've kind of gone the other way. Do you think that maybe people who do what you do either just have a fascination with sort of self-experimentation or more extreme personalities? Because it's pretty drastic change.
Yeah, you know, it took me 5 or 6 years to come around to all of it.
Okay.
So I went really slowly. I think, you know, when you're young, you tend to be more idealistic and the world is more black and white. And I like to think that I've learned from my mistake, especially after the permanent damage that I did to my body. Mm-hmm. I move very slowly now when I make a change in my diet and I really investigate it. You know, I do a lot of research and not just on sites that agree with me, but all over. And I've tried to make myself scientific, just to be literate in a scientific way. I don't have a background in science, but you have to be able to read studies and understand what's going on. And that's not an easy thing. We don't get good science education in this country. And now with the internet, you know, you can just stick to your little bubble, find people who agree with you and never get challenged. And that it presents its own problems. So I try to be very careful as I, you know, have shifted my diet over the last few years. But everything that I've done makes sense to me. It makes sense from, you know, just a historical. Just look at the scope of human history, 2.5 million years, and there's no question to archaeologists what we ate. There's no question.
Right.
The only people who come up with these just-so stories are people who are very ideologically driven. Everybody else agrees, and the evidence is just overwhelming. You know, you can see in the bones and the teeth of the skeletons, you can see that these people ate mostly meat. You see the tools that they left behind. You see the pictures they drew about it, and then their campsites are filled with these remains, and there's just no question what we ate. And you can also look at contemporary hunter-gatherers. There are still 46 tribes remaining of hunter-gatherers, and we know what they eat.
Right.
So there's no question at all. And then you just look at, you know, how our teeth, our jaw, all the way down. We've got one stomach.
Well, really quickly, I just want to, because I know a question that a lot of people will have there, and I think I know the answer. If you look at tribes, hunter-gatherers, obviously their life expectancy is significantly shorter. How would you explain that to people who would just look at those numbers in a sheet and explain context?
Yeah, the number that you actually need, and this is going to get technical, is the mortality rate doubling time. And what that does is it factors out all the environmental reasons that people die at very young ages. So throughout most of human history, if you live to be 5 years old, you actually live to be about as old as we are now. But early childhood was a hard time to be a human being.
Right.
And so you have to factor that out and say, okay, so if you got over all the environmental factors that made being a baby really hard in prehistory, in fact, past that, you had really, really good solid health. That changed when people take up agriculture. Their health declines rapidly. It was actually a complete disaster for human health when people switch from these nutrient-dense diets based on animals to diets based strictly on carbohydrate. And the archaeological record could not be clearer. Their bones just crumble, their teeth fall out, and they shrink 6 inches almost immediately.
Geez. It sounded like National Treasure 18. Nick Cage is going to show up because he has to pay his taxes. Let's keep you on for one more segment because I'm fascinated. Okay. Lear Keith, stay tuned.
You're listening to Louder with Crowder. For the Motor City Maniac, the wit from the Mitt, the Great Lakes Grandmaster, the Motown Madman, the Mittens, Killer Kitten. We ran out of nicknames. You're listening to Louder with Crowder.
We're back, Louder with Crowder. See, this is the thing where I am fascinated with these guests, and I know we do mainly politics in the show, though we'll have professional athletes or actors, but Lear Keith wrote this book, The Vegetarian Myth, which the way I found her was I thought that she was somebody very different than who she turns out to be, and who she turns out to be is very interesting. Lear, thanks so much for being back with us. So you were just talking about how catastrophic, you know, agriculture can be to human health, and listen, I'm a moderate. Okay, I tend to believe that, you know, mainly meats and then some veggies and fruit, and I don't think oatmeal is going to kill you. But I can understand the argument for sort of the paleo crowd. But I do think, like you said, it's undeniable that a lot of this, like a lot of things, is influenced through those in political power or those who can, you know, those who have the most amount of cash. Let's be honest. You were talking about super farms earlier. So that's sure. A big influence. I mean, it has accelerated right now. If you look at the American diet and the food pyramid, human diets have changed at a rate. Really, would you say it's fair for me to say in the last 100 years more than they did in the thousands of years preceding it?
Yes, absolutely. And in the last generation, most of all. And it's exactly because of those government recommendations and the way that they put those policies forward and changed the way everybody ate. And it was a huge experiment on public health. And it didn't happen without protest. There were many, many doctors who came forward and said, you cannot do this to the American people. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence that this is going to help. We have plenty of evidence that it might not. And the government did it anyway. And now everybody is sick and fat and stupid and dying. And all of these diseases have absolutely exploded. They've got diabetes now and children under 10. They can't call it adult onset anymore because so many children have it. It's horrible what's happening out there.
I mean, it's
and
changed.
This is because of, it's just they told everybody to stop eating fat. And concentrate on eating grains. And that's what happened. They switched from fat and protein to eating a diet of carbohydrate. And we were not designed to eat a diet that's essentially sugar.
Right.
And
right.
So everybody got sick.
Well, what about people like Rob Wolf out there, some paleos who say, you know, tubers and root vegetables, things like potatoes, sweet potatoes, for high-performing athletes, it's actually better to have a higher carbohydrate intake provided they're not coming from processed grains. Would you say that argument holds water, or are they off base?
I would agree. But I do think it depends on, you know, how much damage you personally have done to your insulin receptors.
Yep.
I did a lot of damage to mine. I cannot tolerate that load of carbohydrate on a daily basis. So I have to be really careful.
I eat a lot of cinnamon.
That can help.
It's supposed to be good for you because I read it once and I think I'm a doctor. You know, it's funny how quickly it's accelerated. And here's one thing. Like I said, I don't agree with you on everything that you've brought forward, but I do hate it when people on the other side just make simplistic arguments like, well, life expectancy is a lot longer. Well, you know, people used to have 19 kids because 12 of them would get kicked by horses. The difference is now they're being taken out by a few box of Fruit Loops. So the cause of death is very different. And obviously there were acute, I guess you can say environmental reasons is the term you used earlier, or acute causes of death were much more common, right? But nowadays the chronic disease it is definitely a problem that I think everyone kind of acknowledges, but just everyone tries to solve it a different way. And the misinformation out there, I want to get back to your book, The Vegetarian Myth, because you do realize that you are considered, like you said, an apostate, but not only by vegans, but by general mainstream health right now. You know, you should be going to a Jamba Juice and getting a smoothie. You should be, you know, a majority of your plate should be salad and fruits. How does that make you feel when you know what you've done to your body, you know the research you've put into it, and for some reason, a majority of the country is just flat out wrong?
Well, you know, a lot more doctors are coming around. This is pretty much every day in the news you can find, okay, another study that shows, gosh, saturated fat actually doesn't hurt people.
Right.
We were wrong. It was even on the cover of Time, you know, where they're like, oops, butter isn't bad, you know, and it's coming round because they did try this terrible experiment on us all and it failed. So, you know, they're having to retrench. And I don't know how long it's going to take for the really big institutions like the USDA to come out. The thing to know about the USDA is that they are not charged with protecting public health. They are charged with selling commodity agriculture. So they're going to keep pushing that food pyramid basically until they're dead.
Right.
Because that's what makes the most money for those giant corporations. So follow the money. Let's always remember that one, too.
This is true. I often talk about that. And that's where, I don't know if you want to get into disagreements. We don't have to, but that's where I have a disagreement. You know, everyone points to the Koch brothers or Big Oil, and if you look at where the actual money comes from in politics, obviously, like you said, these subsidies for farms are a big one, but some shocking numbers that it's, you know, we've been told it's always Big Oil and Big Pharma, and that's not always the case. A lot of people don't think Big Farms, although their connections are obviously still to Big Oil and ethanol with corn. A lot of people don't think big unions. 15 out of the top 20 donors are big unions, namely public sector unions. So I've railed on that for a long time. If you follow the money trail, and you know how you solve the money trail? And this is where you can tell me if you think I'm out of line. You solve the money trail by eliminating the crony capitalism, the relationship between government and big companies. I always say everyone plays identity politics. We're the party of small business. We're the party of big business. The same thing applies to food and farming. I'm not a guy who's a small business guy or a big business guy. I'm an honest business guy. And if you're running an honest business, you don't need the government to step in with my tax dollars to funnel it to you.
Right, and especially with the big banks.
Yeah, I completely agree.
They're too big to fail. Let them fail. I've had it.
No, you're right. Well, listen, the West Indies Trading Company, I always talk about this, employed a fifth of population Earth. They were making over 20% on their dividends, and they went bankrupt. And that's one thing, too. I remember when people coming out saying, and this is we're learning about each other, Leah. We're finding common ground. Everyone said, the occupiers are coming out. They're the first people to do this. I was at, and I'm not a Tea Partier, I was at the first Tea Party rally, and you know, you may disagree with them on a lot. The biggest signs they had from the get-go were down with Wall Street and no more big banks, no more bailouts. So this idea that there's, you know, that leftists are the only ones against big banks, and I don't know a single conservative, not one, who is a fan of the Federal Reserve or big bank bailouts. It's one of those things that I feel like it's been pushed for some reason, just this false political narrative, and I think it's maybe to, I don't know why people would want to malign one worldview as being with big banks when it's not the case, but we agree on that. I think pretty much everyone in the country agrees, we need to do away with big banks.
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, that was just a rant. It was completely irrelevant, it had nothing to do with meat. So let's go back. One thing I find very interesting that you talk about, and I don't think you claim it as original, but you do articulate it, I think, in a way that is better than most people. So you talk about animals and the domestication of animals. Mm-hmm. And you made a good point. I have it written down in my book here. I don't have the exact quote. But you talk about how people say, you know, animals weren't designed to be this way. And you use an example of, I think it's 10 million domesticated dogs versus, or maybe it's 50 million domesticated dogs versus 10,000 wild wolves. And how, you know, it's sort of funny that we don't see that as evolution from an animal perspective. These dogs have evolved to make themselves useful to human beings, and they live longer, healthier lives. So this idea that domestication of animals is inherently against some animal moral code could be backwards. Am I misquoting it? But I know the actual numbers, but I thought the point was fascinating.
Yeah, and you can say the same things about plants, that most plants don't want much to do with us. But there's a few that figured, you know, if we work together, it's going to go better for both of us.
Right.
And it's true. We've carried them all over the world. We've essentially conquered, you know, the forests to plant the annual grasses that, you know, were willing to be domesticated. So in the service of corn and soy and wheat, we've pretty well conquered the planet. So that was very successful for corn and soy and wheat. Most grasses aren't willing to do that. They're not willing to change their genome enough to make themselves interesting to us. But some plants have been. You could look at the potato. It's the same thing. Michael Pollan talks about the apple. You know, like wild apples are basically inedible, but they were willing to shift their genome enough to make themselves sweet enough that we decided we really like them, and we've planted them all over the planet again.
Sure.
And it's the same with animals. There's a few, not a lot, but a few that were like, let's give it a try. And it's not, you know, us doing something horrible to them or them doing something horrible to us. These are interdependent relationships. And everything in nature is that kind of relationship. That's really my point. I mean, we wouldn't have plants all over the planet if it wasn't for the insects that actually do the pollinating. They work together. You know, the insects get some sugar out of it and the plants get fertilized. And when, you know, when that revolution happened in nature, when plants went ahead and decided to try sexual dimorphism as a reproductive strategy, the world turned green overnight. I mean, before it was lichen sort of creeping along at a really slow pace. And all of a sudden you've got insects that fly and you've got plants making flowers and the world just blossoms, like literally just turns green very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So it works, but it's because they work together. Everybody gets something out of the arrangement. And it's the same thing with domesticated animals and humans. You know, we get something out of it, they get something out of it, and we all live longer.
Sure. Well, it's funny that you say that. You know, you were talking about plants and sort of their process and I don't want to say motive because it makes it sound like we're watching a Disney film, you know, Fern Gully or something. Someone's going to come in here and paint with colors of the wind, whatever that means. But what I do find fascinating, this was an actual conversation with a vegan. She was talking about how she hated meat and it was, you know, it was cruel. And then she goes, Pleth, I just don't want whatever's on your plate because that's just dead. My food is living food. And to me, I was thinking, you don't see the irony that your food dehydrator is the Auschwitz of asparagus.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, this is dead. You're right, it's dead. And it was actually picked up from the local farmer's market, and I knew it lived a good life. I mean, could one argue that if you're going to sort of create this moral equivalency between animals and humans, which I don't believe in. I don't believe that animals are on the same playing field as humans. I believe we're smarter. I believe we have a space program and light bulbs. So let's start with that. Could you then, isn't it pretty easy to then create the moral equivalency between if we're all the same, why would plants deserve any fewer any less consideration than the animals above them or humans?
Well, this was a problem I had when I was a vegan because I didn't want to make those hierarchies, and yet I was. So meat eaters would sort of taunt me with that question about, well, what about the plants? And I never had a good answer because I didn't want to be the person that said, well, animals count, but plants are just dead matter. They're just insensate salads, and I'm allowed to just help myself because I didn't want to put forward those kinds of hierarchies. I mean, this really goes back to ancient Greece. And, you know, their belief was that there's no sentience at all in stone, and then there's dirt on top of that, and that's not really alive either. And then you've got plants, and they're sort of alive, but not really. And then you've got animals, and they're more like us, so they sort of count. But then finally at the top, you've got humans. That's not how nature works, in fact. It's a cycle, and we all have to play. And if you take one piece out of that cycle, the entire thing collapses. If you destroy the soil, everybody dies. If you don't have enough predators eating the ruminants, they will turn the place to desert. You know, like every single being in that cycle has a role to play in terms of making life more abundant and giving the entire community more resilience. So I don't make a hierarchy. I just say we all have a role to play, and we should do that very gratefully because life is an amazing thing. But I'm an apex predator. That's the role that humans play, just like wolves, just like bears. And, you know, our job is to do that well. So,
especially if you're if you've got your conceal and carry permit, you are the pinnacle of an apex predator. You're going to go Jodie Foster in that. What was that movie, Jared? I don't know. It was basically Death Wish with Jodie Foster, where she was offing guys in a subway with a revolver.
The Brave One.
The Brave One.
That movie.
You know what I hate about those movies? Like, I want to get to the part where they're killing bad guys, and I know people, how dare you, you know, all life is valuable. As far as I'm concerned, you rape a woman, you forfeit your right to live. I hate that I have to go through Jeff Goldblum raping an innocent lady so that I have to get to Charles Bronson killing them. And the same thing with The Brave One. I hate that I have to watch a guy get beaten up just so I can watch Jodie Foster, you know, kill them later on. I like the revenge part, but they make those scenes so brutal because you have to hate the bad guy.
Right.
I know I'm a bit of I'm too weak-hearted to watch that.
No. Don't apologize. You should claim your heart. It's a good thing that you feel that. Because it's horrible that we make this an entertainment.
I'm going to push this deep down inside. No thoughts that everyone will make fun of me for. Listen, I know. And I know you're a feminist, but I have to sometimes let my man card show sometimes. There's no way if I tell my friends that I can't. I hate 300. I think 300 is the worst film ever put to celluloid. And I know my man card deserves to be revoked. How many slow-mo decapitations can you take? I'd rather watch The Wedding Singer. I'm not even going to lie. Anyway, I don't know.
Claim it, Stephen. Claim it.
Claim it. Like I said, you know, not a lot of people would think this. I'm not an anti-war guy. I'm an anti-war 90% of the time guy. I believe we should be slow to go to it. I believe we should be slow to be violent. I've never been in a street fight. I don't need to watch it. I don't need. Although I watch, you know, mixed martial arts. We just had Chael Sonnen on. We'll have George St. Pierre on. We have a very eclectic mix of guests. But I think a lot of people think if you, you know, this, if you eat meat, you love meat, you have a concealed carry, that you're inherently a violent person. And it's just not true. You are walking proof of that, Lear. So, there was one more note that I wanted to get into there, but I don't think we're going to have time now. So if people want to find you and read more about your point of view, your work, where should they go?
So it's actually really easy. It's just my name, LearKeith.com. That's a joke because my name is really strange.
Right.
So it's LIERRE. If you can't remember that, honestly, you can just type vegetarian myth into Google. I'm the only one with a book by that name. You will find my website right away. So you'll see upcoming appearances, all my books. You can write me email if you want, all that. I don't read hate mail, so don't bother. But if you really have questions or, you know, you're intrigued by some of this, I can give you more resources, lots of good information. I mean, we barely scratched the surface, obviously, in, you know, a half an hour interview. But there's so much information out there that I really want people to have, both for their health and for the health of the planet.
Yeah. Well, it is probably an even harder name to spell or find if you're in a vegan diet and you're not getting enough saturated fat for your brain. This brain fog. What is it? Kier Leaf. That doesn't make leaf. No, she doesn't like leaves. I can imagine. I will say a lot of fat has definitely helped my brain. So very interesting stuff, Lear, and we appreciate it. And even though we disagree on a lot, I always like finding common ground. And hey, if nothing else, right, you are a feminist environmentalist, but we both like a good steak. And we certainly don't disagree on as much as I did with the previous guest, an actual terrorist who openly called for my death. So there's that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no, I would never call for your death, so.
Well, thank you very much. But if I invade your house, your Great Pyrenees will probably take care of that for me.
That's what she's for. I mean, they don't take prisoners. It's like, you're done. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, 90 pounds, actually, I would have thought the Great Pyrenees was a little bit bigger than that, usually.
Well, she's a girl. The boys are 120 pounds. So the girls top out at about 90, but they're not aggressive, but they're very protective. So,
right.
You know, they don't start the fight, but they will finish it. You know, if somebody is being aggressive toward me, she's on it.
Right.
You know, but if it's not coming toward me, she's like, you people are crazy. What are you doing over there? She won't just run and start something. It's more, you know, if you're coming at me, she just turns instantly from, you know, 90 pounds of fluff into 90 pounds of fang.
Man, I could talk about dogs all day, and then our audience
will
shut off the dial. They're not talking about policy. Although I just nailed Hopper. So he sneaks up on me, and I was just taking a sock off. You know, when you take the sock off, it gets stuck. So there's that momentum, and it flung, and I hit him in the head so hard, and I felt so bad. And he was fine. He came up and he licked me, and he thought I was like going to wrestle with him, so he wanted to start wrestling and growling. Yeah, but I felt so bad, man. Jared here is a producer. He heard it. It was like a. But that's the thing with those Great Pyrenees. They are durable dogs, and they love the rough and tumble.
They're very noble.
They are very noble. Okay.
Noble. Very smart, very noble.
We have to let you go. The vegetarian myth, Lear Keith, thank you so much. We hope to have you back sometime.
Thank you.
You're listening to Louder with Crowder on Wham! Talk 1600. You're listening to Louder with Crowder on Wham! Talk 1600.
Gosh, we went over time with such a lovely lady, Lear Keith. So we don't have that much time here before we go to the half-hour break. But I want to let you know that you can call in this morning. 734-622-1600. 734-622-1600. Because
822.
822? Oh, 822. Sorry, my brain's a... Because this coffee's not bringing out any caffeine because the machine's broken. By the way, breaking news, Taliban claims responsibility for attack killing 19 at Pakistan Shiite mosque. But remember, the Taliban is not a terrorist organization.
So what are they?
According to Barack Obama. I don't know. They're a happy fun time organization. What fun dip?
Happy fun time
organization. Happy fun time organization on drugs. So what do you think? What do you think, Mr. Mrs. Listener? 734-822-1600. How do we need to get a handle on this Islamic fascism taking over the globe? Should we not be calling the Taliban a terrorist organization because we don't want to offend terrorists? We'll be back after the break talking about Brian Williams, his suspension banning words at Ann Arbor, and actually a Dearborn honor killing case, someone who was actually involved with the court decision there.
Oh, man.
You know, you get these Islamic, I don't want to say fundamentalists, you get these Islamo-fascists here in Dearborn who start beating their wives, and now they're offing them, and people don't want to step in because of this multiculturalist bullcrap and fear of offense.
Well, there's a lot of fear I see all around when it comes to the relationships between, you know, the Muslims and other groups. So that it's a difficult situation to deal with.
Well, it is. And just like you said, it's not Islam and Christianity or Islam and Buddhism. It's Islam
and
everybody else.
Yeah.
They're the problem. At a certain point when you look around and you're that guy who thinks that everyone is a jackass, that everyone's a jerk.
It turns out it's you.
So, come on, Islam. Don't be a jerk your whole life. Louder with Crowder. We'll be back after this break. If you're anything like me, you enjoy a good glass of wine. But finding the right kind can be a hassle, or maybe you want to buy a nice bottle as a gift but don't know where to start. That's where Simplified Wine comes in. Simplified Wine makes buying good wine simple. Just call 844-297-WINE, where a qualified sommelier will take your information budget, send you a curated list, and then wine straight to your door. It's just that simple. By the way, they also have a price match guarantee, so it's not only the easiest way to get great wine, but the least expensive. All you do is call Simplified Wine at 844-297-WINE. That's 844-297-WINE. Or don't like phone calls, you can just go to simplifiedwine.com and hit the Simplify button. Same thing, just digital. Any wine you want, they can get. Just call Simplified Wine at 844-297-WINE to have the best wine at the best price delivered straight to your door. Guaranteed. What could possibly be simpler?
Call Simplified Wine today, 844-297-WINE.
We are back. We're happy and dancing to happy songs, except for the fact that Fundit made some awful lukewarm coffee.
Hey, it's the machine. I just pour the water through it.
I blame you. By the way, trending, of course, on Twitter for a long time after the Chapel Hill shootings was Muslim Lives Matter. Because, of course, anyone who is critical of terrorism doesn't believe that Muslim lives matter, right? That's the implication. Well, Muslim lives do matter. Do you know who's been offing Muslims in record numbers across the globe?
Could it be, by chance, other Muslims?
Oh, very good, Dan. Fun dip, ding, 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 with the answer. Breaking, Taliban just claimed responsibility for attack, killing 19 at Pakistan's Shiite mosque. This actually comes to us from FoxNews.com. Peshawar, Pakistan militants stormed a Shiite mosque in northwestern Pakistan on Friday, killing 19 people in a wave of shooting and explosions before the siege ended, officials said. The attack in the city of Peshawar also wounded more than 40 people. The Taliban have claimed responsibility for the assault. They said four or five attackers entered the mosque from the building next door that was under construction, then jumped over an outer wall into the mosque courtyard. One person blew himself up, creating a diversion so the other attackers could enter the mosque. He said at least three attackers died in the violence, two by blowing themselves up, and a third was killed by worshippers at the mosque. Good for you. Good for you guys for at least taking one of them out. Apparently he was unable to detonate his explosive device because they grabbed a hold of him. This is sad. You know, and this is an example right here where people would say, you just hate Muslims. No. These were seemingly innocent Muslims who died here at the hands of other Muslims. At the hands of people who were following Muhammad's lead. Now, Muhammad didn't kill other Muslims. So this is a weird situation, right? I've talked about this quite a bit. And you can call with your opinion 734-822-1600. Do you think this is terrorism? Is the Taliban a terrorist organization? We've been told that they're not. Obviously, killing Christians and Jews is kind of the MO of Islam. It's what Muhammad did. You know, beat his wife, 6-year-old, to be fair, consummated when she was 9. We've talked about this quite a bit. But to be killing other Muslims who are worshiping, I guess they would claim here that they're not true Muslims. Kind of like, remember when we had that terrorist imam on? He said, was it the Shias? Shiites who he said were completely wrong and interpreted the text improperly? He was talking about a group. I don't remember that.
Yeah,
he
I don't
hated.
Remember the specifics of it, but we can always, if folks are interested, they can listen to that, online.
That's true. You can always go to ladderwithcrowder.com and hear the full, or, you know, it's up on YouTube. We have that full interview as a video cast where he was saying, well, they're not really Muslim. So that's what it comes down to. The Muslim violence carried out against other Muslims is because they're not true Muslims, so they might as well be a convert or a Christian or a Jew. The main principle here is they're killing people solely for not being Muslim enough. Muslim lives matter. Well, tell that to the Muslims. Tell that to the Muslims who are blowing people up in record numbers, including other Muslims. Islam is a threat to everyone on planet Earth right now. And I'm going to get some flack for this. Islam is the greatest evil of our time. You think evil, more evil than Hitler? Yes. It's just as bad as Nazism, only they also get to beat their women legally. They feel the same way about Jews. They feel the same way about purification, not in a physical, an ethnic cleansing sense, but an ideological cleansing, that you convert, you submit, or you die. And often you don't get enough time to convert. I mean, you know, I don't know how quickly can I convert if a guy's coming in with a bomb strapped to his chest. I'd probably fake convert.
Well, I mean, when I went from being Catholic to Pentecostal in Ohio, it took at least 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I was dating a girl who went to a Pentecostal church. She said, will you come with me? And I said, I don't really want to go, because I didn't even go to the Catholic church. And so I said, all right, I'll go. And then they had a great band. And 6 weeks of listening to that great band, next thing you know, I'm jumping in the water.
And then you just somewhere you lost your way.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I came back to Michigan and I wasn't able to hear the band in that church anymore,
You could find a church with a great band. I mean, there are churches that have world-class bands now.
Yeah, but I'm a little bit afraid of that.
Why?
Well, because I'm married to a Democrat.
So?
If I got religious, she wouldn't want to be around me at all anymore.
Oh, because they're such a tolerant brood, those Democrats.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't she be happy for you if you found happiness and whatever it is?
Not if I was spewing it all the time and giving people books and stuff about it.
You don't have to be giving people books.
Well, that was one of the things that they told me at the church in Ohio, was that if you're going to be a Christian, you got to proselytize all the time to everybody. And I'm like, but that's the thing people hate about Christians.
Not necessarily proselytize. You know, you live by example and you create something that people want to be a part of. I don't think, you know, for example, there's nothing that angers me more than when Christians stiff someone on the tip and leave a leaflet.
Oh, like, that's obnoxious.
Yeah.
One of those chick tracts.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
In it.
Yeah, Jesus wasn't a cheapskate, man. That's not God ordained. Listen, I'm not going to give you a tip.
How much do you figure Jesus would tip for a cup of coffee?
Gosh, I don't know, because, you know, it used to be 10%, right? And really only in the last, what would you say, 8 years, it's gone up to 20%. So back in his day, I don't know, maybe 1%.
Man, because that was a long time ago.
I bet you Jesus probably tipped extra, though. He tipped on the tax.
I don't think he had a whole lot of income, though.
He was a carpenter for a good long while.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, you know, that's the thing.
His version of Rainy Days and Mondays was awesome.
Here's the thing with Jesus. We talked about this, and we're going to get to Brian Williams. There's so much to get to. But while we're talking about Jesus, Jared, my video producer at LouderWithCrowder.com, and then Fund Up, the radio producer, they're both here in the office. Jared and I were talking about this last night. For some reason, they've completely whitewashed Jesus into this namby-pamby hippie who just believed that everything was okay and everything was acceptable and never judged anybody. And Jesus was a great guy. He was a loving guy, but that image couldn't be further from the truth.
But, I mean, he hung out with hookers and all
no, he
kinds
didn't.
Of other people.
He didn't. No, that's the thing. Think about it for a second. Jesus had hookers. And
no, well, he didn't have them.
No, he had hookers come. I was going to finish my sentence. Had hookers come to him. Although, actually, a lot of people will argue, and possibly accurately so, that Mary Magdalene wasn't a prostitute. but let's assume that she was. But hookers, and by the way, tax collectors put on the same playing field as thieves and hookers in the Bible. I love that. And he said, you know, follow me and sin no more, right? They followed him. They were no longer tax collectors. They were no longer hookers. Jesus didn't turn to Mary and say, yeah, sure, you can keep hooking. Just sandwich, you know, sandwich my Sermon on the Mount between your 4 and 5 o'clock. He didn't say that. She followed him and she left that life behind. Now, do you think that Jesus would still have just been hanging out with him, hanging out with her or him, the tax collector, if they kept doing that? No, they wouldn't have wanted to be around each other. It doesn't mean he would reject them, but the whole point was their spirit changed and their lifestyle changed. So often you'll get girls, you know, who are dating just absolute D-bags who are either abusive or they're alcoholics or they're just bad people. Well, you know, and they're a Christian, you know, they're going to youth group. Well, and they do what we call missionary dating. Well, I'm just, you know, Jesus hung out with the sinners. Jesus hung out. First off, you're not Jesus. You're not capable of being around that constant influence and coming out on top. So this idea.
I knew Jesus and you are no Jesus.
You are no Jesus. Exactly. So this idea that people use it to just excuse bad association all the time. Of course, I'm not saying you should only hang around with people who agree with you or only hang around with Christians. We just had Lear Keith on. We couldn't disagree on more.
Well, I like the fact that she likes to eat meat.
She does.
I am really craving steak now.
Yeah. Well, she's really big on, you know, ethical farming, which I don't think you're getting with the Hebrew National hot dogs. She's big on buying local and supporting your local farms, which, you know, listen, I am too. It's not a hippie thing. If you can support a farm where you know where the food is coming from, why not?
Well, if I've met the cow, I can't very well eat the steak. It's got to be a stranger.
Really?
Yeah. One time I went to a petting farm and I couldn't eat meat for a year.
I don't believe that for a second.
I'm serious.
You didn't eat meat for a year?
It was
cross your heart?
It was at least a year. I was working at a movie theater that was showing a lot of independent and art films, too. But I mean,
you were a vegetarian for a year?
Yeah, yeah. And I tried to be vegan until somebody told me that the lard in Twinkies is made from meat.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's meat in Twinkies? They don't taste anything like beef. I was really
You're
disappointed.
You're a sad, strange little man.
I'm not little anymore. I've had too many.
You went vegan, and that, you know, that's what she talks about. The vegan thing is horrendously unhealthy because you have some people who do it ideologically, and I just disagree with that because I play for team people. I believe that people should have dominion over the earth, and I believe that we should be able to eat the animals we want to. And I think
you wouldn't
that,
eat dogs, though, would you?
No, I wouldn't eat dogs. Well, dogs. This is a perfect example. As a Christian, I see dogs, and I see such a purposeful creation from God to be your eyes and ears. They have the heightened senses that we don't have. And then we have the ability to provide for them. It's a very, I don't want to say codependent because we're not dependent on dogs nowadays, but not too long ago people were. There weren't alarm systems. There weren't warning systems. You had a dog. You didn't have all these, you know, newfangled hunting, devices. You used dogs. And we just talked about that. Fundit was getting coffee, but she talked about this idea, you know, where people say domesticating animals is cruel. That's the vegan ideology. She said, well, why don't you, and I thought this was an incredible point, why don't you consider it an evolution of the animal to become domesticated? Kind of like a remora on a shark. You know, they cling to the bottom of the shark and they eat the scraps. She said, look at the 50 million domesticated dogs versus, I think, only 10,000 wild wolves.
Yeah, it's a very symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. The dogs have evolved to realize, oh, these people feed me scraps. Oh, these people take care of me. I'm going to make friends with people. If we're acknowledging biological evolution,
yeah,
why don't you acknowledge intellectual evolution?
I just heard a horn.
It was my phone. It was my wife.
You've got a clown horn for your wife?
Yeah, and my brother's listening, and he just texted me, cats are totally useless.
No!
They are.
My cats are my very best friends in the entire world.
Oh, they're useless.
No, they are not.
Oh, they're useless.
No.
Whip them out a window.
No, like last night, I was kind of cold in bed, so I'm like, hey, Bobber Cat. So Bobber Cat comes up, curls up next to me. Evie Cat sees that Bobber Cat's curled up on my right side. Evie lays down next to me on my left. Totally warmed me right up.
Oh, Fundip's talking about cats. It's time to go to a break. That's what that means. Because I don't want to talk about cats because I'll be enraged. It'll be worse than parking spot or road rage.
I love cats.
Yeah, I know. Because you love useless, pointless things.
No, I love cute, furry,
it's because you're a trivial human being.
Things.
It's because you are a trivial, petty human being that you like cats.
My cats are so sweet.
I'm trying to drown you out before this break, and you keep talking.
Oh, no.
How dare you. Louder with...
I'm going to go play with my cats.
Oh, Louder with Crowder. We'll be back.
You're listening to Louder with Crowder on Wham! Talk 1600.
So glad to be back. Fun Dip was talking about his cat before the break, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I want to say something because Fun Dip doesn't even realize I have a whole stand-up bit about this, but he said the cool thing about his cat is...
Yeah, she acts like a dog.
Exactly. But, that's it.
But she's
that's it.
Cuter visually than a dog.
Anyone who says if they try and defend cats for the soulless succubuses that they are, the first thing they say is, well, my cat actually thinks he's a dog. There you go. That's all you need to know. Then just skip the guesswork and get a dog. You're clearly acknowledging that dogs are better and more useful for human beings than cats.
But visually, cats have cuter faces.
No, I don't think of that for a second.
My bobber cat is the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Hopper's much cuter. Hopper's a cute... I'm sure bobber cat is cute. Cats can be cute in the face, but they're just jackasses. They're just such jerks.
No, Bob's sweet.
Has Bob ever bitten or scratched you? Ever?
I don't think... Cho-Cho has, but I don't think Bob has.
Never. She's never, like, hissed or...
No, she's really lazy. She's... If you were to take me...
Let me ask you... I'm narrowing you down, Fun Dip. Has bobber cat ever once... bitten or scratched you? Ever once? Come on, you know if this has ever happened once.
She may have scratched unintentionally, like walking across me, but that's because I forgot to trim her nails.
I mean, in an actual act of, like, conscious scratching or biting, not even once?
No, that would be more Cho-Cho's deal.
Okay.
Bob is...
That's incredibly rare.
Bob is super, super mellow.
That's what I hate about cats, is that they do that, and they get... Put it this way, if Hopper did what Cho-Cho... does,
yeah,
they take him away forever because he's a 90-pound ball,
yeah,
cannonball of muscle. So we have a much higher tolerance to cats' jackassery. That's what I hate about it. It's the liberal equivalent to the household pets because you just tolerate all their crap and tell them that it's not their fault.
It's kind of like how the hot girl gets away with more, you know, stuff than, say, the fat middle-aged guy.
Sure, they will tell
you
this.
In the world?
I think in the world, the hot girl gets away with less stuff than the unattractive girl now. Because I've watched, you know, my wife is quite attractive. Obviously. I don't say that to brag. I think she's quite attractive. I think you would say she's an attractive woman.
And not in front of you.
Well, that's fine. It's not an insult.
But I'm a lecherous old pervert.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I think she's a beautiful woman. And other people obviously we go out, people stare at her. I notice immediately she's very sweet. I mean, we, you know, rescued a dog. She volunteers to help special needs people. I mean, she serves her community and her church. She's just a great, great person, genuinely. Right away off the bat, women who are less than attractive are mean to her the second they start talking with her. And the fact that she's only nice to them is like, you know, it's like heaping hot coals in their head. They just can't stand. Like, she's pretty. She's supposed to be a B word.
Yeah, they don't expect somebody who's attractive to actually also be a decent human being.
Well, she wasn't always attractive. When she grew up, she looked like a little boy. She had braces and a bowl cut and Milton Office Space glasses.
Oh, very cool.
And those were by request.
Well, that builds character. The uglier you are as a child, there was a phrase, ugly in the cradle, pretty at the table. And pretty in the cradle, ugly at the table. And it was about how an ugly child grows into a better looking adult and vice versa. I was a gorgeous child.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry. I was horrendous. Horrendous child and then a mediocre adult. So, by the way, I just want to respond to something here because I did a video up at louderwithcrowder.com. Is the Second Amendment for muskets only? And the premise of this video was actually to go, you know, you have a bunch of liberals who say it was designed for muskets. And we have all the actual clips of Rosie and Chris Matthews and
those
Jamie Foxx.
Those classic guns that you show are sweet.
Yeah.
I want those.
The Belt and Flintlock could fire 20 rounds with one pull of a trigger in 5 seconds.
I totally want those.
The Girondoni air rifle, the Puckle gun, all developed before the Revolutionary War. And by the way, there are letters from Congress wanting to buy Belt and Flintlocks. Then we have a letter of Mark and Reprisal from James Madison giving a ship, private ship permission, like, yeah, to use cannons. So this idea that it was created only during an era of muskets and they couldn't foresee evolution of weapons, it's just false. And it's one of those things, you know, Jared, my producer, was even talking about, because he's not really like hardcore conservative, right? He's a good guy, but he's kind of coming along with me. And he goes, this is something I didn't really even think about. He goes, but people who are going to speak about this publicly, he goes, why don't they just run a quick Google search? Like weapon, pre-Revolutionary War weapons. They would only need to run that and go, oh, you know what? I really shouldn't go out and make the Second Amendment's only for muskets argument. Cause it's so easily rebutted.
Oh yeah.
But they make it all the time.
Well, that's cause they're morons.
Well, and it's accepted in society. That's the problem. But I want to read you a comment. Someone saw the video and said, Canada has 100 less gun-related homicides per capita a year than the U.S. Here's the thing about that stat. I don't care if it's a gun-related homicide. I care about the homicide statistic. Knives, hitting someone over the head with a toaster, I don't care what the tool is. So when people are like, oh, gun homicides, yeah, but there's more violent crime in the UK than in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
People don't understand that.
Hit you with a brick or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Something like that. You know, they hit you with a, was it a, what do they call that thing? The leather with the lead in it. You know what I'm talking about? Blackjack? Blackjack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what you want. Like, what? Why do you want guns? To protect yourself from who? Other people with guns? Guns are built to harm and serve no other effing purpose. Would you ever legalize poison? Okay, dummy. Let me tell you this. I'm a dual citizen. There's a big historical difference between the United States and Canada. Would you want your guns to fight who? Well, actually, funnily enough, we used guns to fight off the tyrannical government you bent over and pulled down your pants for. Canada. We said, you know what? No, we're not going to live under your thumb. And Canada said, where do you want it, eh? That's the big difference between America and Canada. So yeah, you're going to have more rugged individualism and a mistrust of government from a country who actually had to fight for their freedom, as opposed to Canada, who bent over and still prints the queen on their nickels, you dummies. And I say this as a Canadian. It's pathetic. It's pathetic, not Canada, it's pathetic to not appreciate the history. And it's the same example of people who don't appreciate soldiers out there. You've never done it. You've never been in a battle. You've never fought a war. You're not from a country that understands fighting. Listen, the United States fought the world's greatest superpower one century, only to become the greatest superpower the world has ever known the next century. That's never happened before. And it happened because of a spirit of, I don't want to be under your thumb. I don't believe in religious persecution. We believe in freedom and we're actually willing to fight for it. And that fight requires firearms. So when people say you Americans are just irrational, you have a fear of government. Why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we have a fundamental mistrust of government? That's why we left Europe. And that's the problem with leftists. They're trying to, well, look, if you look in Europe, I think we're better than Europe. That's why we left. That's an opinion. But I think you can back it up historically if you look at the way Europe was treating people. Look at the Church of England. People who don't understand the separation of church and state, it's because there was an official Church of England. We said no more. So the guns were kind of important, you stupid Canadian dummy. Your name, Robert Wary, commenting on you. Why would you want guns? Very simple. We want guns because we're not Canadians. We want guns because they have a backbone. And some Canadians have a backbone, but it wasn't required to bend over for the Queen. Learn to grow one now, Robert.
For the Motor City Maniac, the wit from the Mitt, the Great Lakes Grandmaster, the Motown Madman, the Mittens, Killer Kitten. We ran out of nicknames. You're listening to Louder with Crowder.
So glad to hear that, that cat in there.
I love cats.
I think you're getting a phone call, Fundip.
Ah.
I think we've been getting phone calls all day and you're just not answering. I've been seeing the light flashing. You didn't have the ringer on. Gosh, I can't believe this. This place is a nightmare. Glad to be back with you with the third hour. We are going to have Robert Mries with us in a few minutes, who actually is part of a law firm, the American Freedom Law Center, and was involved in a case where Christians were literally stoned to death at the Dearborn Arab Festival in 2012. So he's going to be arguing this free speech case to the full U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. Interesting stuff. We usually don't like to have the really dry guests on, but, you know, they... Was that someone calling to complain about the show?
Yeah, we've got Joe from Dexter with a comment on the Muslim victim thing that's going on over there.
Oh.
So let's see if we can get him on the air. Good morning, Joe. You are on the air with Stephen Crowder.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, sir. Thanks for calling in.
I got a few creds. I'm an expat Canadian. I'm a dual citizen like you. Came from Ontario. Marine Corps veteran from the Vietnam War.
Oh, thank you.
I think I know a little bit about where certain things, anyway. Others think
okay, but let's move it along to the point you want to make.
This outpouring of grief and Muslims crying hate crimes, I wonder if these are the same group of the good Muslims who never say anything when some of us get killed.
That's a good point. I don't know. I don't have enough information on the story yet, but it's a good point. Listen, I mean, if you look at the actual statistics, a vast majority of Muslims, Joe, believe that the punishment for conversion should be death. You know, that's not a radical terrorist group. That's mainstream Muslims. So it certainly doesn't justify...
Politics in rep by theology.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I got another quick question for you.
Okay.
Not a question, but a statement. I've always had dogs and cats all my life, and I'll tell you why I like cats. They are independent of me. They choose to be with me. Every cat I've ever had.
Are you on speakerphone or something, Joe? Because we can barely hear you, brother.
No, I'm on a Bluetooth.
Good Lord. You fire whoever sold you that thing.
Usually it works just fine. But I'll tell you, I like the independence and self-reliance of cats. They don't need us. They just choose to be with us.
No, well, listen, Joe, I appreciate your call. And you're right. Cats don't need us. They're independent. So I say let them be independent in the wild and fend for themselves. That's my thing with cats. You're right. You don't need us. You don't want us. Go screw yourself, cats.
Hey, that's not very nice.
You're an outdoor cat now. But you declawed me. Oops. You still bit me.
You're horrible.
I don't want your teeth around my four-year-old, you feline perversion of nature. Indoor cats.
You're just mean.
I don't like cats. I don't like cats. I don't like cats, and I'll never change my mind on cats. Well, we were talking about something before Joe called in.
Muslims.
No, we're always talking about Muslims.
Cats?
Oh, the American Freedom Law Center. Yeah. That guy's going to be in here after the break, yeah. Anyway, we can get back to the gun thing. Before we're going to come out, I was going to talk about the gun thing with Canada. And then you know, it's always weird to me when a caller calls in. Which, by the way, you were missing all the calls earlier because I was seeing those lights go on. And
when?
Earlier in another segment. I can see the lights here.
They were, the only time I saw the lights light up was during your interview with, the meat lady.
No, I saw one earlier. You were too busy, you know, enjoying your coffee or something.
I'm pretty solid on those lights. This is
the reason, you know, send me your tweets to S. Crowder. The reason I usually don't, and I appreciate Joe from Dexter calling in. The reason we usually don't like to take calls, it's the same reason that when I do Q&A, you know, at stand-ups, 9 times out of 10, it's not a Q. It's just a statement. It's like, I mean, why? Why call in to just make a statement, you know, or to reiterate something? I've never understood that. But you know what? And I appreciate that people care enough.
Maybe it's because you don't have any answers.
Maybe it's because I don't have any answers to statements. A statement doesn't require an answer. It's like, yeah, what's your question? I like cats. Okay, thank you very much for calling in. And you move on down the trail, you know? What did Hillary? My wife is always texting me during the show. She said I almost just said the F word. Don't even deny it. I don't think I almost said the F word anywhere.
I didn't notice it.
I don't use the F word off air.
I sure do.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know why she would text me that. Oh, this is a bizarre. So we do have a guest coming on next who's going to be discussing people stoned to death here in Dearborn, Michigan at an Arab festival in 2012. That's just crazy that that's not a national story to me. By the way, here's another story. Speaking of dogs, Rosie O'Donnell leaves The View in a hurry. She left The View again. So how long was her tenure here this time? Remember, she was on for a couple years. She came back, and now they fired her again.
I don't know. I never watched that show.
Well, I guess she had a heart attack, and she's trying to limit stress. Which is, a heart attack's never funny, but I can list you some things that Rosie O'Donnell should probably cut out of her life before The View if she wants to limit the chances of another heart attack.
Hot dogs, Twinkies.
Yeah. Rosie, if you're having heart attacks, let me tell you, the cause of it is not Barbara Walters. Or I don't even know. Who's on The View now? Who's on The View? It used to be Barbara Walters. Was it Meredith Vieira? And then it was the Rosie O'Donnell.
There was actually like a cute conservative chick on there.
Yeah, she's on Fox News now, Elizabeth Hasselbeck. And that's what's always weird to me. Like, I like Elizabeth's a nice gal, but she's now delivering the news, and her greatest qualification is she was the most attractive girl on the original Survivor.
She was on Survivor?
That's how she started, and everyone's like, look, Elizabeth Hasselbeck in a bikini. And she parlayed that into The View, and now she has like a show on Fox News. I mean, good for her. But I just don't, all I picture her is in the bikini, shaving her legs with a hunting knife on Survivor, and then I'm supposed to listen to her talk about Islamic terrorism or geopolitical issues. And I'm judging, and it's a jerk thing to do it, but that's all I can picture.
Well, people can be multifaceted.
Yeah, but not when you're shaving your arms with a machete in mosquito-infested Survivor. It's
how
tough
bad
for me
did she need to shave her arms?
I don't know. Apparently, a lot of women, apparently guys now are shaving their arms. But anyways, not Kanye West. I have another story up about Kanye West.
I hate that guy.
I love his music, but I can't stand him as a person.
His music drives me insane. He did a thing with Paul McCartney. There was so much auto-tune on his voice, he sounded like a Cylon from the old Battlestar Galactica from the 70s.
Cylon tea can be delicious.
Cylon's made
Ceylon,
tea?
It's Ceylon tea. Anyways, we were just actually at Palm Palace last night, and they had boxes of that stuff. Before we just shut up, Fun Dip. Rosie O'Donnell left The View. This is what we were talking about before I got into Kanye. It was a word
squirrel
whisker for me, and then you go off on Kanye, and that's why people will start shutting off the show. It's entirely your fault. I blame you entirely and exclusively. So Rosie O'Donnell said she'll come back to do occasional crafting segments because she has a hot glue gun and will travel. Ha 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 ha. Rosie O'Donnell, is a 9/11 truther. She is an example of someone who thinks guns, the Second Amendment, was only created for muskets. Seldom does someone, there are people with whom I disagree who we always try and find common ground. I mean, think about it. We just had Lee R. Keith on, who is a feminist who believes in the idea of the patriarchy and believes that humans are the problem, and she's an environmentalist. But we found common ground, right? I can do that with most people. Seldom is there somebody who's wrong on every issue. Rosie O'Donnell is one of those people. She is a miracle in that she doesn't even find something correct accidentally. So she's left The View now, and they're left with Whoopi and a few other people. Anyways,
I really think she likes dogs, though.
Rosie O'Donnell? I don't think so. I guarantee you she's a cat person. I tell you what, I guarantee you take the stats, liberals are more cat people, conservatives are more dog people. I would bet my bottom dollar that more conservatives are dog people. But you can't respond because we have to go to break. So let's just end that on the slanderous comments toward cats. Speaking of, perfect transition with Gawain's strange animal.
You are a strange animal.
I am a strange animal. So is this guy. You should go see the video. We'll put it up at ladderwithcrater.com. He wears tights. So do I. Ladder with Crater. We'll be back.
Animal print tights, no less.
Hey, this is Steven Crowder with Louder with Crowder to tell you about one of my favorite sites on the web, AR15.com. I know you hear AR15 say, isn't that the scary black rifle? It is, but AR15.com is actually the best website if you want a community from which to learn about how to care for your gun, gun safety, where to find concealed permits, courses, as well as the best online gun store in the business. I'm talking ammo, accessories, upgrades, all of it can be found at AR15.com. That's AR15.com.
You're listening to Louder with Crowder on Wham! Talk 1600.
So glad to have you back, finishing up here this final hour. We were just talking about Rosie O'Donnell leaving The View, because that's important. But obviously in funny news, Brian Williams now suspended 6 months without pay, which doesn't seem like enough to me for lying about that. I mean, wouldn't we consider that stolen valor? That's something people get really mad about, right? It's illegal to go out and mimic like you're a member of the troops. But what if you're actually claiming credit for some kind of act of valor with the troops that never really occurred? That's a little bit weird, too. That's a gray area. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not a fan of Brian Williams. I never liked the guy. His daughter, best friends with Lena Dunham, in all cozy with Jimmy Fallon, that whole kind of relationship with the Lorne Michaels crew at NBC, and everyone tried to play it like he was down-the-middle journalist. And we knew it wasn't true. This is just the tip of the iceberg with his lie about Iraq, his lie about Katrina.
I even heard that he had lied about being robbed in his neighborhood when he was a kid.
Well, he's a compulsive liar, but so was Walter Cronkite. You know, that's the problem with media, period, is that media is just, we've been told that, oh, the days of unbiased journalism are gone. They never existed. There's never been unbiased journalism. It's never happened. So that's always, I've said this so many times on air, I don't want to sound like a broken record. Be left, be right, just don't lie to me. And Brian Williams was lying for years to his constituents and charged them ultimately $10 million a year. But our next guest, from the best to my knowledge, is not a liar. He is a co-founder and senior counsel at American Freedom Law Center, and actually has an interesting case that he'll be arguing before the Supreme Court on a Christian killing in Dearborn at an Arab festival in 2012. I'm just amazed this isn't a national story. Robert Muse, thank you so much for being on the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, Stephen.
No, I'm glad to have you here. So, listen, you're obviously, you work in the legal sphere, but there's a specific incident here that happened, you know, just down the road from where we record in Dearborn. Why don't you tell our viewers, listeners about that?
Right, and just the correct things. It's not going to be the Supreme Court. Nobody was killed, but the Christians were literally stoned, assaulted. Some of them were badly bruised. There was a group of Christians that attended the Dearborn Arab Festival in 2012, carrying signs, walking on the public sidewalks, which remained open for the public, so it's pure free speech. And they were literally confronted by an angry mob of Muslims wielding bottles and stones, and they were pelting the Christians.
Kids.
Some of them were bloodied. And really, the crucial point here from the First Amendment perspective is that after this was going on for some time, and we have video of it, actually, and you can go to our website.
Well, let me ask, because I obviously misread.
It doesn't look like something you would see on a city street in the United States. And when the Wayne County Sheriff's Department pulled the Christians over and the Christians were pleading with the police officers to do something about the criminal assault, the Wayne County Sheriff's Department told the Christians that if they didn't leave the festival, they would be arrested for disturbing the peace.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question here, Robert.
And literally turns the First Amendment on its head.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question here, Robert. And I don't know if you can hear me when I'm cutting in because you're starting to cut out when I cut in. Okay. So obviously I read stoned at a festival. And once I realized there was no marijuana involved, assumed generally stoning is done to death. A couple of things. How severe was this actually? Did they throw a couple of pebbles? Was it like, you know, you'd throw it at a raccoon by a camp cooler? Ah, get out of here. Or were they causing actual damage? And what were the Christians doing before that? Not that they would ever warrant being assaulted, but obviously liberals love to victim blame. And they would say, well, the Christians had signs or they were inciting this. What's the context there?
Yeah, sure. And again, you can watch the video. It wasn't just pebbles, as you described. They were hurling, concrete. They were hurling concrete pieces that they found on the street. They were throwing rocks. They were throwing bottles. One of the Christians' head was cut down the middle. He was bleeding on his forehead. It was pretty bad. Most of them were teenagers. It was probably a group of 20 or 30 of them that were pelting balls, stones, and other debris at them. Again, you can watch it on the video. And the Christians were carrying signs. Some of them were provocative, no question. But, you know, the point is, and I'm sure you appreciate this,
sure,
as somebody who's, you know, free speech is your living, Is it the provocative and the off-putting speech is the speech that requires the greatest protection under the First Amendment? And in fact, the Supreme Court has said as much.
Right.
So, you know, what they were saying or what they were doing in terms of their activity was constitutionally protected.
No,
so,
I completely agree. It's irrelevant, but liberals won't say that. That's the point. You know,
yeah.
Liberals will tell you, for example, when I was punched in the face at a union rally, it was, well, you were there. You deserved it because you were insulting them. I wasn't insulting them. I was saying, I support right to work. I hope that your union gets dissolved because I believe it'll be better for the state. Tell me why I'm wrong. You know, a punch to the face is what I ate for my troubles. So, I listen, believe me, I'm playing devil's advocate. It could not be less relevant as to what they were doing or saying, provided they weren't, you know, obviously committing any acts of violence. How common is this kind of violation of human rights in a place like Dearborn? I mean, we have so many stories that come out of there, you know, obviously that deal with domestic abuse. It comes from a different rule of law. When you're talking about an entire gathering of Muslims anywhere in the world, there is Islamic rule or they have control over a government. Sharia law comes into place and you see these violations of human rights. And in the United States, we see quite a bit of it coming out of Dearborn, right?
Yeah, and there's no question, and it's no surprise that it has the largest Muslim population in the U.S. This
right.
wasn't the first case. This is my third lawsuit that I have against the city of Dearborn for actions that are somewhat similar. I represented four Christians who in 2010 were preaching on the city street. We have video of what they were doing, and it was calm. It was actually very good, very well articulated, and the city police officers came and arrested them and threw them in jail. They spent the night in jail. For preaching, and they claimed that they were about to incite a riot. I defended them in the criminal trial. They were acquitted. We turned around and sued the city of Dearborn, the chief of police, and 17 police officers. The city eventually issued a public apology and had to pay $300,000 in damages. In fact, the group that showed up in 2012 that were stoned went there to protest the way Christians have been treated at the Arab festival, and this is what they get for their speech activity. And, you know, I'm going to be arguing this case before the full court of the Sixth Circuit, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit.
Okay.
That's before a 15-judge panel. That is those are very rare because the Sixth Circuit acknowledges, because even to get a full court hearing,
mm-hmm.
the standard is that there has to be a prior decision of precedent-setting error of significant public importance, because
right.
the lower court held that the violence justified the suppression of free speech. And one of the dissenting judges made the point that, look, you're enforcing blasphemy laws here in the U.S. And the majority of the court agreed with that. Reversed that decision, and it's going to be re-argued before a 15-judge federal panel. I'll be arguing that on March 4th. So this is an exceptionally important case, and the courts realize it. Because think of what the
let me ask you something, Robert.
The incentives you're creating.
Robert, let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. You're talking about Dearborn, but you don't sound like you're a Michigander. Where's that accent?
Well, I served 13 years in the Marine Corps before becoming a lawyer, and I grew up in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you have a little bit of that twang to you. And you're in Michigan now?
I am in Michigan. I'm in Ann Arbor. My colleague is in New York.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, hey, listen, Robert, thank you for calling us and filling us in. We'll have to have you back as we get updates on the story. Listen, it doesn't take that long. People don't understand. It takes one or two court cases. It takes one or two examples to normalize this, to
yeah.
create a press, you know, that people go, oh, this is our baseline now, and then the next generation moves along from that. And that's how you see things like Sharia law, things like making it okay to hit your wife become standardized in the UK, because a generation grew up with standards a little bit lower, and so that's their baseline. And that's what we can see here. So listen, before we go, where can people find you, Robert?
Our freedoms were handed down to the bloodstream. They must be protected every generation or else they'll become extinct. And your point is exactly right, and Reagan made that point very clearly in a very famous speech he gave.
Right. Now, where can people find you, Robert, right quickly before we go to the break?
Yeah, AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org. O-R-G.
AmericanFreedomWatchCenter.org. Thank you, Robert, very much for calling in. We appreciate it, and great point. Freedom needs to be protected with each and every generation, and the First Amendment expressly protects freedom of speech that may be offensive. That's what needs protection the most. And as a matter of fact, we'll get into, even here at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, right outside of Detroit where we are, they want to ban words and determine what's offensive and what you're allowed to say. They come for your guns, then they come for your words. Louder with Crowder. I'm gonna do the things that I wanna do. I ain't got a thing to prove to you. I ain't gonna wear
place to dance to a happy song.
So glad to have you back. Just had Robert Muse.
Yeah.
I need to get his name correct.
Robert Muse.
Because guests have a thing about that.
Well, hey, what if I called you Stephen, like, Chowder?
I've gotten that so many times. I was introduced by a guy one time in, gosh, one of those godforsaken places.
Duluth?
Wyoming. It was Wyoming. And he just had read from a Wikipedia page, like, even the bad stuff.
Oh, no.
That wasn't even close to true. I mean, depending on the day in Wikipedia, you can go on and it says, you know, I'm a closet homosexual, like, just stuff just to put on there.
Because people have gone in and edited it.
Yeah, gone in and edited it. And it's really hard to edit it if you're a conservative that's, like, pro-conservative. One thing I find funny, too, about feminism, if you look up feminism on Wikipedia, you know, for example, it has all these stats, like women are on average, you know, about 42% to maximally about 60% as strong as men. So less than half as strong as men. So, and then it talks about how grip strength in women, you know, talking about the physiological differences between men and women, the grip strength differences between men and women were like 60% less for women than men. And this was a study done with untrained males and trained female athletes. But then you look at, and these are scientific studies, right, that are cited on Wikipedia. And then the feminist viewpoint, so if you look at the reference, those are scientific studies, and then you look at the feminist viewpoint, which is some people discuss that these studies were flawed because they, I don't know, because they believe that men are genetically programmed and encouraged to work on their upper body strength, so it's not a question of biology, but society. And the reference is like Naomi Wolf or some feminist screed. So all the references for the fact that men and women are different,
yeah,
science, and then the references that it's a construct of society, some feminists wrote it.
I think there's one reason why men have more grip strength.
Oh, stop it. The show just takes a turn. Every time, you know, we try and be nice. We try and have a nice show and
it's
then fun.
It's from picking up their coffee cups.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, because women don't drink coffee.
What do you think?
What a horrible cover. Fun dip. I am so tired of you and your trap.
This is good coffee, though.
So, talking about free speech, here in Michigan, University of Ann Arbor.
It's not called the University.
Oh, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Sorry, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. You know what I mean.
They'll get you for that.
Well, see, when I'm reading news and I've got a bunch of words in front of me, the word you're reading sometimes comes out instead of the actual word. So I've already read University of Michigan. I'm now reading the word Ann Arbor, and so it came out University of Ann Arbor, which, God forbid, you ever do that out loud with what you're looking at on your computer. It's a smut pot.
It's
so,
pictures of cats.
$16,000 campaign at the University of Michigan. By the way, if there's anyone out there right now in Ann Arbor who's a student at U of M, please let me know on Twitter at S. Crowder, because I will be on campus today conducting some interviews.
On the Diag?
Diag, yeah, and all those areas out there. Yeah, the Diag is the best area to get the students. And I'm not trying to make anyone look stupid, by the way, on campus. I want to actually get to the bottom of what young people think.
They're U of M students. They're going to look stupid. They don't even look both ways when they cross the street.
That is a thing here.
It kills me.
Well, you need to kill them. Just one of them to, you know, to set
yeah, with a, I guess with a Buick like mine, I don't think I would make too much of a dent.
No. Just tink.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll them and their the hipsters time. In a little one gear, their fixie bicycles.
Carrying their Macs all over the place.
Gosh. So a $16,000 campaign for University of Michigan to teach which words people should not say. To really try and reprogram. They're saying it's not officially a banning of words, but people want to sign a pledge that includes a list of forbidden words that they won't say.
Is it Carlin's list?
No, it's not Carlin's list. So let me give you a few. So obviously the ones, you know, I'll say, hey, if someone wants a cigarette, hey, can I have a smoke of that fag? That word in a different context.
It's a British term for
fag.
Cigarette
is an actual word,
yeah.
So you can't say that. Raghead, you can't say. Okay, of course. Tranny, they don't want you to say now. I guess mechanics are in trouble. They don't want you to be able to say gay. Retarded. So these are words that most people could agree with, but then you go a little bit further. You can't say illegal alien. You can't say ghetto.
Can't say ghetto?
You can't say ghetto because it's insensitive to people who might live in impoverished neighborhoods.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
You can't say insane.
because that's now insensitive to the actual clinically insane. Or you can't say crazy. You can't say crazy.
So what is the clown posse now going to be called?
It's going to be called the in need of counseling posse. And it's just, you know, slightly abnormal in the membrane.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't say gypped.
You've got to be kidding
me. Because
it
offends gypsies. Now, here's the thing. Gypsy is not necessarily a particular ethnicity.
Yeah, doesn't it just mean, like, roving?
That's what I kind of thought. You know, I'm picturing Esmeralda, Hunchback of Notre Dame, kind of, you know, vagabonds.
Or thinner.
Yes. And obviously the fortune reading, you know, that kind of deal. Yeah. Like, at a certain point, I just don't give a rat's ass.
I'm offended. I was locked up for years because I was throwing my excrement at the walls, and so they locked me up. And now you're saying, I can't, you know, you're using the word crazy. It hurts my heart.
We should lock you up and throw away the key, and I don't care if you're offended.
What about things like the Fighting Irish or you Mick? You know, there are terms that have attacked my people for years.
Yeah. I'm sure that's not allowed. Well, also they ask questions. I'm trying to find this list here of, they ask questions, for example, like, here you go. I'm bringing this up right here. And, they ask questions like, if you say, hey, can I learn how to twerk? Would you say that if you realize that people are, actually taking advantage of minority culture? Would you ever say that if you knew that? Would you ever say that if you knew that twerking is part of a minority culture that whites only consume when it's convenient for them or trendy? They're asking these questions. Would you say crazy if you knew that it hurt the feelings of someone who's clinically insane and is seeking psychiatric counseling? These are questions they're asking students on campus, and my answer is yes to all of them.
That's crazy.
Well, and they say it's
what
not.
What about cray-cray? Are people allowed to, because that's what the junior high kids are saying now. That's so cray-cray.
Right. Cray-cray. That's cray-cray. What about gay-gay?
I haven't heard
that. Cray-cray. That's so gay-gay. You can't say cray-cray. Okay, gay-gay. It's no longer gay if you put two gays in there.
Yeah. But that's when they have the most fun.
That's when it is the most gay. Yeah. A $16,000 campaign financed by the university. Here's the thing. People will say, well, this is just, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's a drop in the bucket. There is a start right now. Well, not even a start. We're far enough along down the trail. Just like our guest talked about Dearbornistan. Were kids on campus, think about this, kids who are going into college now, they're not much younger than me, 20, 21-year-olds. Their upbringing has been no freedom of speech. It shouldn't really, well, freedom of speech is kind of a thing, but you really shouldn't say those things, and they shouldn't be protected. What I find funny, too, is the N-word isn't in here.
I think it's because it's assumed, maybe?
Maybe. Also because they write these words out. They write the word fag, ghetto, raghead, insane, retarded, gay, tranny. They write those out, but no one actually wants to write out the N-word because there's an actual reason people shouldn't use it. It was a word. The N-word was designed from the ground up to hurt. Its sole purpose was to hurt another human being, right? Now, it doesn't mean that someone shouldn't be, I'm not gonna go and say Kanye or 50 Cent is a hate speaker. But that's what the word was designed for. No matter how you reappropriate it, that's what the word was designed for. That's not the case with tranny. It's not the case with gay. It's not the case with retarded. It's not the case with ghetto. Certainly not with insane or gypped. Those words weren't designed to maim the human soul. And that's why they don't even see the irony in the fact that they're too afraid to write the actual word that would be an example of one that everyone should probably not use. They should be allowed to, but it probably should be agreed, let's try and not use this word. They don't even write that down because it's so serious, they're too cowardly to approach it.
Uh-huh.
I bet you if they were to say, well, if I were to say to them, you know, well, why shouldn't I say fag? Well, why shouldn't I say gypped? They would explain to me why it's offensive. I don't even know if I can say the N-word on air. I will in the video. For well, what about blank and blank? I bet you they would walk away. I can't believe you said it. I can't believe you said it. That's because that's actually an offensive word.
Now, what if you were walking out there looking like Kanye or 50 Cent and asked that question? Would it be different?
Well, yeah, if I were in blackface, I would deserve to get my butt
kicked. I don't mean wearing blackface. I mean actually being of that descent.
No, they wouldn't care.
It seems like a double standard.
It's not a double standard. I mean, it is a double standard, but sometimes there are double standards that are appropriate. I mean, there should be double standards sometimes. There should be double standards in the sense that, guys and women, men and women are different. So we shouldn't have the same PT requirements in gym class. No.
But are people of different races different really on the inside? No.
No, you're
all humans.
That's a good point. We're all humans. Well, it's the same thing.
Well, I'm kind of like a Klingon, maybe.
Well, it's why the interracial marriage is not an accurate comparison to the gay marriage thing. And I'm not making a political statement right now on the gay marriage thing. But the truth is when someone says, well, people were against interracial marriages, actually, it wasn't like everyone was against interracial marriages. There were some people who were. But it's to equate a difference in skin color with actual biological differences. For example, I don't believe that a black mother can provide something that a white mother can't, or that a white mother can provide something to a child that a black mother can't. I believe that a black woman, a Chinese woman, an Indian woman, a Lebanese woman, or an Irish woman, they can all be great mothers and provide what a mother needs to provide to a child.
Yeah, like a mom's a mom.
Yes, but I do believe that a mom can provide something to a child that a man can't.
Milk.
That's just one of them to start. And obviously now they say we're in a new age, you can pump the milk. Okay, fine. But black and white is not the same as man versus woman. I don't believe that there's any difference between a black mom and a white dad, or a black dad and a white mom with children. I believe they can give everything that child needs. I don't believe that two daddies can give exactly the same thing. Now, someone can argue that it's maybe better or worse, but they can't give the same thing to a child that a mom and a dad can.
But they can. The kid can turn out just fine.
The kid can turn out just fine. Absolutely.
Or two dads.
I'm not arguing that.
Yeah.
But there's a reason it's considered the ideal, because of the fact that, listen, feminists don't like to hear this, the idea of complementarianism, that men complement women and vice versa, that we both got gaps, right, Mick? She fills gaps, I got gaps, we fill gaps. Together we fill gaps. It's the truth. It's the way men and women, I would argue, designed. You can say it happened from a primordial petri dish. But we are different, and if you look at the ways we're different, we complement each other. So it is very unfair to compare racial differences to actual biological differences between a man and a woman. And I find it insensitive. I find it insensitive to compare, to compare the two. So I just find it ironic that they have all these words. I'm, insane, retarded, gay, tranny, gypped, illegal, alien, fag, ghetto, raghead, is words you can't say. Many of them probably shouldn't say, but the N-word is nowhere on here. Also, expressions. You can't use the term, I want to die, because that's offensive to suicidal people.
What if you really do?
You say it all the time on this show.
I say it every day of my life.
Imagine that, or someone says, my wife sometimes would be like, oh my gosh, that puppy's so cute, I just want to die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can't say that. I mean, imagine being at a party 30 years from now. Oh, look at that punch, look at that ice sculpture in the punch, that's crazy. You can't say that! I'm sorry, I feel embarrassed, I just want to die. You bastard! I mean, you just hit a point, you can't say anything. This was Lenny Bruce. Please, he sat before a court and said, don't take my words away. This is a liberal guy with whom I would agree on virtually nothing. But yes, first they come for your guns, and then it's easy to take away your words. You shouldn't take away anything from a private citizen. But I am amazed that people on the left and the right don't fundamentally agree on, you cannot and should never take my words away. We'll talk more about this after the break, Lotta with Crowder. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Louder with Crowder on Wham! Talk 1600.
Wham Talk 1600, WAAM. We are on the air with Steven Crowder. We're having such a great conversation behind the scenes. I'm like, Oh, the bumper music's running out, man.
Did they come back in on me laughing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like people know there was some fun stuff going on.
Wendip is such
scenes.
A crap talker off air.
Oh, man.
You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, I'm just evil. I'm so mean and evil.
He's the kind. Wendip's the kind of guy who, if he were playing sports, if he were capable of playing sports or dunking a basketball, he'd dunk on like a 6-year-old kid. Boom! Boom! Didn't see that coming, did ya?
Well, I do a lot of fencing with Ben.
Do you actually do fencing with Ben?
Yeah.
Is that a sport he's taken up?
No, I mean, we have a couple of plastic lightsabers in the house, and we play in the backyard.
Yeah, but I was thinking you actually like fencing rules where you're on the straight line.
No, it's just, you know, hitting each other with lightsabers.
Now, when you hit each other, are you doing the thing where you're clearly just trying to hit each other's lightsaber, or are you actually trying to hit each other?
Well, I try to sneak past the lightsaber and pretend like I'm cutting off his arm or cutting off his leg, but I don't hit him hard enough with the thing to where it would actually, you know, leave a welt. He tries to hit me that hard.
You have to do that every now and then. Just push him down. Just push him down.
Well, I do. I just use the force, and then it throws him 30 feet up against the wall.
No, physically. You need to shove your son down just every now and then. Every now and then, so he learns to get back up and not cry.
He gets knocked down. He gets up again. So, yeah.
Passing the night away. Take a whiskey drink. Take a vodka drink. Take a cider drink. You take a lager drink. Sing a song that reminds us of the good times. Sing a song that reminds us of another
bad time.
Hit. Oh, wait. The bad times.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is all times after the 2 weeks this song played on the radio.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Like, bad times are coming, Chumbawamba.
Tub thumping.
It's one of those things. There must have been, it's kind of like when there's a week and there's nothing in the news. When there's just genuinely no talented artists, or maybe there just weren't any songs coming out. You're just like, I don't know. I got this demo on my desk. All right, run it. Run it.
And then it just goes through the roof for 2 weeks and then gone.
Yeah, well, you want to talk about a black dot in an entire country's history, the Macarena.
Oh my gosh, you're not kidding. That was about 95, 96, and I was dating a girl, and that was her favorite song for that entire time. I mean, I could still see her doing the whole thing in my head where you put the arms out and then you turn your hands over.
Like, was that Spain or was it Mexico?
I think, I'm not sure where that originated from, but it was Los Del Rio was the name of the artist.
If it's Mexican or if it's Spanish, that is like their Holocaust.
Oh, man.
That's how terrible the Macarena was. You know how people make like unfair comparisons to the Holocaust politically? Kind of this is like another. I think that one was fair.
Well, it was certainly a musical travesty.
It certainly was a musical travesty. It's one of those weeks. It's one of those weeks, man, where you have a shooting. You've got Brian Williams lying about. I don't know if you noticed, like, I've been laughing so much this show compared to, say, last week because it's reached the point of absurdity.
Oh, yeah, yeah, very much so.
Where I can't, I mean, it's one of those, I just can't believe that Brian Williams, I still can't get over the fact that he genuinely thought he would say, you know what, I misremembered being shot down by a rocket. And he thought the Americans would just be like, oh, well, happens to the best of us. I mean, like, well, how did he think we'd react?
He's such an idiot. Apparently, his mind must work like that of a 5-year-old child. Because that's how they say things when they get busted. I didn't steal the Jammy Dodgers or the Oreo cookies or whatever.
Exactly.
The dog did it. You know, yeah. It's all over their face. There's crumbs
on
their
shirt. Let's be honest here. The classic excuse of the dog ate my homework, literally, not figuratively, is literally more believable than I misremembered.
Exactly, totally.
Being shot down. Honestly, if someone were
to... The dog ate my Chinook helicopter.
Right, yes. No, honestly, if you're a teacher, let's do this. If you're a teacher, okay. Brian Williams, right, lying about this deal. Okay, I'm trying to set this up and think of a way that is the most legitimate comparison. Let me noodle this for 1 second. All right, I've noodled it. So, for Brian Williams, if you are a teacher, okay, little Brian Williams, little five-year-old comes in, okay? And there's another kid. Let's call him the Macarena kid since we were talking about him. Los Del Rios. Little Los Del Rios. Little Brian Williams. Los Del Rios says, the dog ate my homework. And then Brian Williams says, I think I did my homework, but I was shot down by an RPG in a helicopter. Which excuse would you find more believable? Literally, Brian Williams' excuse for the misremembering of being shot down in a helicopter is less believable. Not figuratively, it is literally less believable than the old dog ate my homework. And he thinks we're going to buy it. I mean, how... And I know this just goes to show you that liberals, that leftists in the entertainment elite, they have contempt for the American people.
He must think that the average viewer listener is a complete idiot.
I don't know how else you do that. And so must have been everyone else at NBC was complicit. I don't know if you saw the emails that went around with an executive at NBC saying, hey, you should stop lying about that story. Otherwise, we're going to have to request that you stop lying more officially. The thing is with Brian Williams.
He's going to be Hillary's running mate. That's what it is.
Right.
Her Benghazi issue, his Chinook issue. She's going, yeah, I'm choosing him to run with me.
Do you think Hillary would say, I misremembered it. I thought it was because of a YouTube video. It turned out it was terrorism.
No, she would actually stand by the lie and say, no, everyone else in the world misremembered that. I am right.
Yeah.
That's what she would do.
You did a passionate impression there. you look like it. It's the most disturbing. We need to dress you as Hillary Clinton for next hour.
Oh, man.
Look like the female gremlin.
Oh, okay.
A very rough picture. But that's the takeaway here, Americans. Is it funny? Yes. The Brian Williams situation is funny, but you need to dive into it and understand that that shows just how stupid those in the media think you actually are. If they're willing to lie, if Brian Williams is willing to lie about being shot down himself, which doesn't matter, which doesn't really affect you, it was just a story to build up his credibility and resume. If Brian Williams is willing to lie about a story that never else happened to him, what else are they willing to lie to you about? Louder with Crowder.
If you're anything like me, you enjoy a good glass of wine. But finding the right kind can be a hassle, or maybe you want to buy a nice bottle as a gift but don't know where to start. That's where Simplified Wine comes in. Simplified Wine makes buying good wine simple. Just call 844-297-WINE, where a qualified sommelier will take your information budget, send you a curated list, and then wine straight to your door. It's just that simple. By the way, they also have a price match guarantee, so it's not only the easiest way to get great wine, but the least expensive. All you do is call Simplified Wine at 844-297-WINE. That's 844-297-WINE. Or don't like phone calls, you can just go to simplifiedwine.com and hit the Simplify button. Same thing, just digital. Any wine you want, they can get. Just call Simplified Wine at 844-297-WINE to have the best wine at the best price delivered straight to your door. Guaranteed. What could possibly be simpler?
Call Simplified Wine today, 844-297-WINE.